It's time for TWiT. A great show ahead for you with a wonderful panel, including Ed Bott from ZDNet. From IDG, we've got Jason Snell. From Evernote, we've got Rafe Needleman, John C. Dvorak's here, too. We'll talk about the Surface Pro and why Microsoft didn't seem to make enough of them. We'll also take a look at the new video fad sweeping the nation, the Harlem Shake. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 392, recorded February 10th, 2013. I'm on the board. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use our offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support for all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the latest tech news. And we have undoubtedly the most prestigious, the most balanced, the most journalistically adept panel we've ever had on the show. And I'm just thrilled to have them. Starting with John C. Dvorak, all in plaid. Good to see you. You and I are matching lumberjacks today.
Yeah. And good we're okay.
Work all night, sleep all day.
Something like that.
Rafe Needleman. Formerly of CNET, but now yes. Of Evernote.
That's right.
You've crossed over to the dark side?
You went to Evernote?
Walk on over to the, to
what is your title at the Note?
My title is Platform Advocate, but I'm also writing.
So you're an evangelist.
Yeah, for the API and the platform so people can build cool stuff in Evernote. But I'm also writing about startups in a blog called Opportunity Notes.
Oh, I get it. Not Knox. Notes. Also with us, the editor-in-chief, actually managing editor. What is your title now?
Editorial director.
Editorial director. But managing editor, editorial director, formerly Macworld alone, now you're Macworld and PC World,
yep.
Mr. Jason Snell.
It's great to be back.
So you cover both platforms. Is there a Linux world?
There used to be, but I think there isn't anymore.
Okay.
But we do have TechHive, which is our sort of general tech.
Love TechHive. That's launched now. I'm really happy about that. Also with us, Ed Bott. Love Ed. You're in Tucson, right, Ed?
Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Santa Fe. I knew it was something
Speaking
like
of
that.
Cities that are different from the rest of the United States.
You fleed there from the Bay Area? No. Where were you before?
Oh, gosh. We've wandered all over the Western United States.
Yeah.
We're just trying to find a place where our picture isn't in the post office.
Ed writes the Ed Bott Report for ZDNet and covers a lot of Windows stuff, but you've become like John used to be, kind of cantankerous, you're kind of tell it as it is kind of guy.
Yeah, I guess
I like this one. Surface Pro versus MacBook Air. Who's being dishonest with storage space, really? Which was great. We're going to talk about the Surface Pro, but before we do, it's all about me. I want to talk about me. Do you mind? I was in New Orleans, as you know, John.
I heard this.
On Sunday. And I wish I had read this from the Times-Picayune, a little column by Jeff Duncan, A Visitor's Guide to the New Improved New Orleans for Super Bowl 2013. A lot of really nice tips about things, to know about and so forth.
And here's the tip that I really should, you know, don't drink primary colored drinks, for instance.
That's, like just red wine?
Yeah. Like, well, a hurricane, right?
Don't drink primary colored drinks.
Don't panic. If a chicken guy in a chicken suit plops down in the bar stool next to you, he's probably the corner attorney. Go to Tipitina's, rub Professor Longhair's bust. But this is the one I should have paid more attention to. Don't answer if someone in the quarter tells you they know where you got dem shoes. Just keep walking. You'll thank me later. Now, had I read that, when the guy walked up to me and said, I bet you I know where you got them shoes, I wouldn't have shaken his hand and said, I bet you don't. But I did.
And what happens?
He says, you got them on your feet. That'll be $20, please.
There's some guy going around town with that gag?
Apparently, not so much so that it's in the newspaper.
Huh.
If I'd only read that. Anyways, a lot of fun.
You got them on your feet.
Would you have fallen for that?
No.
He then shined my sneakers, which I thought I would have paid him $20 not to do. But I felt he probably felt he should give me something of value for my money. Cheers.
That probably keeps him from getting arrested.
I don't think anything would keep him from getting arrested had I screamed bloody murder. But I feel like as a gentleman, I had shaken on it. And I owed him $20. He was scamming me.
And you'd have no idea where his hand was before that.
Yeah, no, probably on somebody else's shoes. Mm. Surface Pro came out on Friday. Ed, did you stay up late? I know that Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theroux actually went to the Best Buy at midnight on Friday.
You know, I was invited to that, but then Microsoft wound up canceling an event that they were going to have for their MVPs because of
Nemo. Yeah.
And Nemo, the Surface RT launch, and then Sandy, the Surface Pro launch, and then Nemo.
Oh my God.
So I'd say if, you know, when it comes to Europe, if you're in London, batten down the hatches, check the weather forecast, because there will be a storm there. No, I didn't stay up late. I did get up early the next morning and checked and discovered that the one that I would have considered ordering was already sold out everywhere.
That's the 128 gigabyte version.
Correct.
Yeah, they okay. So it launched February 9th. They were not taking pre-orders, unlike the RT. I bought the Surface RT, the tablet version of this, by pre-ordering, and got it day and date. But they weren't doing that, so people had to go to a store. Very few Surface Pro 128s were available. In fact, in some cases, not even many 64 gigs. What's the story?
I don't know. I've done a little bit of talking to people about this, and it appears that there were an average of somewhere between 3 to 5 units at the Best Buy and Staples stores in this country, and there were as many as between 20 and 50 per store at the Microsoft stores. Of course, there's far fewer of those. So, you know, if you do the math there, I figured there were probably in the range. There could have been maybe 15,000 of them in the channel. It's interesting because people talk about, well, Microsoft made a big mistake by undersupplying these. But remember, both Best Buy and Staples were the ones who would have had to buy these and then sell them through. So it strikes me that they bet conservatively. And then the Microsoft stores, they stocked up, and I don't know, if I were a product planner for this, I'm not sure what I would have done. The reviews were lukewarm for the device. The demand for the Windows RT one wasn't all that great. So,
this is Microsoft's first foray into hardware.
No, to
computers.
No.
They've obviously done hardware computers for years, but they've never made computers before.
They did. They have made prototypes, though.
Reference models.
Yeah, and they did like their first.
But they didn't have to make 15,000 reference models.
No,
or 50,000, or 200,000, or probably 750,000 or so of the Windows RT units. And I would imagine that they're planning to make, somewhere between 1 million. Maybe 2 million, maybe more, of the Surface Pros this year.
Will they sell that many, you think? You've reviewed it. I'm sure you've looked at it, Jason. Mm-hmm. It seems that there are better Windows 8 tablet choices.
It seems that there are. I mean, that's the thing, is it's fascinating to watch Microsoft and wonder what they're doing strategically. But as a product, know, there's some interesting, innovative things about it. But I know that, you know, John Phillips, the editor at PC World, spent a lot of time with it. And he said, you know, it's not that great a tablet. It's a better laptop. But there are other really good options for Windows 8.
The devices. Yoga is a good choice, but, the ID Pad.
Well, let's put things into perspective here. If you talk about 1 million or 2 million, there are going to be 240 million at least Windows 8 devices sold this year. That's, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. That's right. One half of 1% of the PC market. And it is at £2 with the type covers and with you know, the kickstand and all of that. It is an innovative device. I'm not aware. The only other device that I'm aware of that has similar specs is the Acer Iconia 700.
That's a beautiful notebook.
That's a beautiful little machine.
Or a tablet, I should say. It's not a notebook.
Well, you know, it's sort of, it's one of those hybrid devices because you can, you know, you slap it into this little frame there and then it has a keyboard that goes with it. But that makes it primarily a tablet. It makes it very hard to be a mobile device. This thing is an extremely portable device. Here, you asked me.
There it is. He got it out of the box. This was a review unit that was going back.
Yeah, and so here I have dropped it several times from 39 inches by accident onto a hard surface, and it still works. Here's the click in.
Can I step on it just to see?
Just put it on your table.
You put it on wheels and use it as a skateboard. That's what Mr. Sanofsky
did.
That's
right. He did that.
So here's the, you know, there's that, and then there's the, you know, there's the type cover. But really, I'm not aware of any device that has this much PC power in it that weighs this little.
So you recommend it.
As I said in my review, there is a class of person who will really, really, really gravitate towards this device because it is extremely mobile.
Yeah.
And everything and all of the devices that are coming out here have compromises of one sort or another with them. You know, so you can have light or you can have powerful or you can have tablet or you can have, you know, and everything. You can't have it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so this one, I think, is going to appeal to people who are, first of all, Microsoft-centric. So if you're in an organization that is, you know, Exchange and SharePoint, you're going to, you know, you're probably going to find this very friendly towards that. And it also, I think, is good because the battery life is Ultrabook class, you know, at roughly 4 hours.
Right? I mean, you would like to see more.
You would like to see more if you're going to be completely mobile with the device. Right. But if you're if your primary work situation is you're in a corporate office where you're going from room to room where there's, you know, there's power and there's Wi-Fi and such, and so you're never going to be using it for more than an hour or two without having an outlet nearby, the continuous availability of power isn't that big a deal. So, you know, again, all of those things, when you take it, they narrow down the potential market for this to a relatively small number. But a relatively small percentage of the Windows 8 market is still a large number in absolute terms. And so I think, you know, 1 million to 2 million is not an unreasonable number.
Why does Microsoft make this Surface? What is the point for Microsoft? What do they gain?
Oh, I think part of it is to be a hero device, a flagship device to sort of set this.
It's not a reference design. It's a hero. Is that a different?
They call it a stage for Windows. So basically, this device has no crapware on it.
Right.
None.
I know Microsoft would love manufacturers to do more what they call signature PCs.
So I have I have in my office, which I'm going to be reviewing this week, three alternative devices that are similar hybrid type devices. And, you know, I'm not going to name any names right now. I will later. But one of them has so much junk on it, both on the desktop side and on the Windows 8 tile side. Yeah. You know, you just look at it and you want to cry. And so Part of it is that. Part of it is the build quality of this device. You know, Jason, I know your reviewer no doubt had problems with things like battery life and things like maybe the camera quality and such. But nobody who has picked up this device that I've given it to has said anything except wow when it comes to the build quality.
It feels good.
Really well built device.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't feel cheap at all. It feels really nice. And there's no doubt about it. And I think it's great that Microsoft built this because they are saying this is what a Windows 8 device can be and a Windows 8 tablet can be.
How much is it? 64 gigs is how much? Do you remember?
Oh, $899.
Yeah. And then 128 gigs is
$999.
So it's a little pricey.
I wonder if they're making any money on it. I bet they're not making
money. Well, you think they're not making money?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I've seen some breakdowns which show they're getting, you know, a fairly standard PC industry margin on it, which is low. Right. But this is fairly competitive with this class of device. I don't consider this pricey. The devices that are competitive with it cost around $1,000.
Right.
Remember, it has 1920 by 1080 resolution and a digitizer in it.
It's very high res.
You are not going to find those features in a device that costs less than $1,000.
Well, let's bring up something here, which is Leo's question about why are they doing this in the first place. I'm going to just bring up again my point, which is that they're doing it for their stores because they have to have something to sell, and they intend to follow Apple's strategy of having three or 400 stores around, and they need to put something in there. That's why I will suggest they will also bring out a tower.
They had a Microsoft store at the Sony Metreon.
That was ages ago.
That was ages ago.
And it was terrible because there was nothing. It was
they didn't have an Apple store. Was the problem? They had nothing to copy.
Right.
Apple does it. Shows you how to do it.
The new stores are much. They're much better than that. The new. Much better than that. But they need.
They look just like Apple stores.
They do.
Which, by the way, Apple has trademarked the trade dress now. Of the Apple store, probably in response.
You know, Apple has the most sales per square foot of any retail operation in the world.
Not just computer store, retail.
Including Tiffany's.
Yeah.
And Microsoft took one look at that and said, why aren't we doing this?
So I'm trying to buy, it's only $100 more for the 128 gig Surface Pro. I'm trying to buy it out of stock. It won't even let, and this is at the Microsoft online store, it won't even let me select the radio button. It's like, not only out of stock, but you can't even pre-order this for some date in the future.
They sold all the radio buttons.
We may never make, the radio buttons are sold out as well as.
Maybe they just made one run.
Why would you do that?
You made one run.
Microsoft actually underestimated demand for their own computer. That's a pretty sad commentary on the state of affairs for the rest of PC industry.
Well, Nerve asked a great question in the chat room. Why is Microsoft so bearish on its own hardware?
Exactly.
Shouldn't they be
enough? Because this is just a dry run for something they're going to bring out later, and they don't want to just get everyone caught up on this thing?
And
by the way,
both the RT and the Pro are not the real versions, that there will be a real version soon.
I wouldn't be surprised, but you have to remember when IBM was doing its ThinkPads, they would do one run of every, they would estimate how many people were going to buy, and they'd do one run and go on to the next model. And this may be the policy.
That's it. They're not going to make any more.
Right.
That's it.
Probably.
So I have to buy. Now, here's the question, and Ed, you respond to this a little bit. A significant amount, around 30 to 40 gigs of space is taken up by the operating system, the restore partition, and so forth. So people are complaining, especially on the 64, hey, we're not getting a whole lot of free space on here. And Ed, you responded to this, of course, saying it's not just Microsoft.
Right. The MacBook Air and the Surface Pro are almost twins when it comes to the amount of free space that's left after you configure the 128 gigabyte device, and then especially if you use the built-in utility in Windows 8 and copy the recovery partition to a USB flash drive, so you can have that 8 gigabytes back. When you do that, they both have somewhere, and now you have to compare them using the same terms. So if you use Apple's measurements, you have somewhere between 104 and 106 gigabytes of free space on a device that is advertised with 128
gigabytes. That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. I mean,
on the 64 gig, though, it looks a little light.
On the 64 gig, if you measure it using 64 gigs is in decimal. So if you measure it in decimal, what you have is 32 gigabytes of free space, and then you have the 8 gigabyte recovery
So I can get 40 gigs.
Which you can remove. So you get 40 gigs. Now, on a MacBook Air, it's around 45, I believe. So the thing is,
there is one difference, which is I can get a bigger drive in my Air. I, at this point, can only get 64 gigs in a Surface Pro. Period.
That's true. And so there's a customization option that's available for Microsoft in the future.
Someday.
They ought to feel pretty optimistic about the response from this weekend, and maybe they'll ramp up production. Maybe they, this was better to sell out and then be able to deliver on it later than to have stores filled with pallets of of merchandise that just sits there for weeks.
And Theater Monkey does have a very good point. There is an SD card slot in the Microsoft Surface Pro.
There's an SD card slot in there that you can put 64 gigabytes in there now, and you'll be able to put 128 gigabytes in there next week. But look, so a question that people have been asking me all week is, why do Apple and Microsoft even sell the 64 gigabyte models?
Right.
And this is, and I've been thinking about this, and there's actually a really good answer to this. 2 years ago, a 64 gigabyte device was a terrible idea. Today,
because of cloud,
especially next year and the year after that and the year after that, it's going to be, this is basically going to be what the Chromebook should be. Anybody who likes the Chromebook but objects to the fact that they can't run, they can't put things that don't run in a browser on it, should say, well, okay, this is not a bad thing at all. In a cloud, in a world where you're going to have most of your stuff in the cloud anyway, and it's a companion device that you're going to, you're going to use, and then you're going to bring it back to your home or your office or whatever and sync it up with the cloud, 64 gigs seems basically okay.
There may be another reason. Dan Ariely talks.
It's not going to be okay for us. It's not going to be okay for anyone in this room because we're all.
There may be another reason. Dan Ariely and Predictably Irrational calls it the decoy effect, and it's often used in pricing where you do three prices. You do a low price that nobody wants, but it makes the middle price look better.
The monster cable effect.
Yeah. And it could be that, except there's a flaw in this, which is you don't have any 128 gig Surface Pros. You're stuck with a decoy.
I think it's important to, I mean, Ed's whole approach this week, which was right on to say that if you compare it to the MacBook Air, it has similar storage characteristics.
Right.
I think what's interesting is people have to think of this as a PC and not as an iPad, because the storage math is different when
it's
you're talking
not
about
a tablet.
And it's not. It's a PC. It's a Windows 8 PC, and it behaves very much like the MacBook Air does in terms of how it handles storage with a reboot partition.
It has local
partition.
Storage.
And, yeah, exactly.
And you have access to it. There's a file system.
Exactly.
That's why you have all that power. So you can do stuff that traditionally you do with local data.
We're going to take a break. When I come back, more and more I'm hearing, especially from people in our chat room, that they are not using Windows 8 as intended. They're actually running various utilities, some free, some not, and turning it into a Windows 7 desktop machine without Metro. They're going to the classic mode. And I'm curious about that. I want to ask Ed and John, Jason and Rafe. We got a great panel for you. We're talking about tech. Lots more. And a little later on, we're going to create a viral video right here on this show. So you're going to want to stay tuned. That's why I've got the Beyonce finger lasers on. I'm ready. You want to stay tuned for that. What are you looking at me like that for?
They're not lasers.
They're not lasers.
They're LEDs.
I choose to think of them as lasers.
Well, God, thank God they're not. Can you imagine?
I'd be shining
these
blinded.
In the air. Oh, no. At the Super Bowl.
This whole table would be destroyed now.
Yeah, we had a little accident, a pre-show accident, where I actually broke the table we're sitting at.
When did that happen?
I got up on top of it. It was kind of a mistake.
Wow.
And people can't see it right now, although I imagine you guys have already tweeted it.
Oh, it's all right.
There's a YouTube video out there of you breaking the table.
There's already a video of me breaking the table?
Yeah, it's racking it up.
Criminently. Oh, no. This is going to be bigger than our viral video.
The table has a
There's
Twitter
a Weight Watchers
too.
Ad.
Yeah, there it goes. There it goes.
Oh, no. Watch out. No. Get on there, Leo. What are you, crazy?
Money getting involved.
Oh, jeez.
That's terrible. Yeah. And you're right. There is a Twit Roundtable Twitter account. And it's only got one tweet. Ow. It's probably a short-lived account.
The net works fast.
The net does not sleep. It never sleeps, and neither does our fine audience. Our show today brought to you by our friends at audible.com, the world's greatest audio bookstore. Show of hands. I'm just curious. I don't know audio listeners here, Audible Books?
Bit.
Yeah, you a little bit?
Little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, Rafe, yeah. Ed, you don't travel. You don't have a commute. Ed, you probably don't have time to listen to audiobooks.
I commute about 10 feet.
Yeah. It's really great if you commute. In fact, that's when I found Audible in the year 2000 when I was driving back and forth from Petaluma to San Francisco for Tech TV. But I can't stop now. I just love it. I've listened to more than 500 books on Audible.com, including the one I just mentioned, Predictably Irrational, which is a wonderful book. We interviewed Dan Ariely on triangulation. And I just love this idea that you can use economic theory to analyze people's behavior. It's about the hidden forces that shape our decisions, including that decoy effect used by marketers and catalog authors everywhere to create demand for a price. If you give people two prices, they go, I don't know. You give them three prices, one that's just, ridiculous, but just for a little bit more, you can get a lot better. It's very interesting. Anyway, great book, highly recommend it. Tell you what, you can get two books for free. This could be one of them. There's so many good choices. How about the, John, you'd love this, Janice Ian's autobiography, Society's Child.
Huh.
I'll skip it. But, you know, if you were an Anne and Nancy Wilson fan, if you're a fan of
Janice
Heart.
Did Janice Ian die recently?
No, she's still here. She's still with us. Oh. She learned the truth at 17.
Who was I thinking? Laura Nero. That's what I was
Did she pass? Yeah.
Well,
great singer. Heart Story, Kicking and Dreaming, a story of heart, soul, and rock and roll by Anne and Nancy Wilson, and they narrate it. Now, that's awesome. Audiobooks could be that, but they can also be history, science fiction, thrillers. Pardon me?
I said, you're darn right.
You're darn tootin'.
The Rook.
What's The Rook?
That's my latest sci-fi fave. You should check it out.
A novel by Daniel O'Malley, narrated by Susan Dernan.
English bureaucracy, except they've got superpowers like X-Men. It's pretty awesome.
Dude.
Check it out.
Why didn't you tell me about this sooner?
I told you as soon as I knew.
Dude,
The Rook.
I'm channeling Brushwood. This is beautiful. Look, we got a couple of books already. Here's the deal. Go to audible.com/twit2. You get two books free. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's the two-book-a-month account. The first month is free. The first two books are free. You can cancel in the first month, pay nothing, keep those books. The Rook, I'm adding it to, let's see, do I have a credit? I do. I'm going to buy this sucker right now. You like it, huh?
Yeah, really good.
I love the idea of superpowers.
Are you feigning?
Feigning?
Feigning the fact that you probably get all these books for free?
No. I pay for an Audible account.
Huh.
What do you mean get these for free? How would I get them for free? Here, have an audiobook. It's yours free, kid. Just write nice things about
us. You do the
us.
Same thing if you go to the right web page. You get two free books if you type in the code or whatever.
You could do it. You're even better than Leo. Audible.com/twit2 because I already have an account. I just told you. I haven't had an account since the year 2000.
They don't give you a discount?
No.
After all the work you do for them?
You're almost on the board of directors. Retail for my Mustang.
Find that to be unbelievable.
I know. I should be getting free stuff galore. But there's this little thing called ethics, John.
What ethics? You might as well be on the board of directors. You love this company.
They actually, when I went out to Audible a few years ago, I went out to visit them in Newark, and they did. They said that. They said, you ought to be on the board of directors. We love you. They said exactly those words. And then they said, see you later. Bye-bye.
They never invited
nice
you?
Nice to have you. No.
Oh, well, they probably do that with all visitors.
They do. Audible.com/twit2. I admit it. I'm a big fan, and I highly recommend it. If you... The Audible app is great on Windows Phone, Metro, but also Android and iPhone. Really a great way to have your whole library available to you. Listen anywhere, everywhere. I've got it. I have a Sonos system. I have it playing through my Sonos throughout my house, so I'm doing the chores and listening to my book. Yeah, I do chores.
What about the butler and the maid?
Don't they
do anything?
You know, I used to let them churn the butter, but they just don't do it right. And so I have to do it myself. Silver Lining Playbook. Apparently, I like the movie, but apparently the novel's even better by Matthew Quick. Some great choices at Audible. Audible.com/twit2. Thank them for their support when you're there. Say thank you. You should put Leo on the board. I don't want to be on anybody's board of directors.
You're on this board. Aren't you on a board here?
We don't have a board. It's a sole proprietorship.
Oh, the dictator. I'm
the dictator.
You are the board.
I am the board.
You are the brute squad.
I am. So Windows 8, let me ask you, do you like EdBot? You probably used it more than anybody here. Do you like the, Metro? Are you the classic kind of guy?
You know, it's interesting. I got an email. I don't know if you remember Woody Leonard.
Oh yeah.
Woody and I used to write books together, and now he lives in Thailand and writes a column for Computer World.
That's neat.
I think. And he asked me that exact same question this morning, and I thought long and hard about it. And so, yes, I do like Windows 8. I like it a lot for two reasons. Number one, the performance improvements over any previous version of Windows are just worth it. And number two, the ability to sync all of your settings and files and apps and stuff across multiple devices. So when I set up a new device, boom, all of my stuff is there. I have very, very little work that I need to do to get it working. That's transformational also. The act of setting up a new PC is not painful anymore.
Right. I do like being able to log into my Microsoft account, and it's all set up. I do like that.
So I use, so of course I use a fair number of desktop apps. Microsoft Office is still a desktop app. But on this PC that I'm using right now, which has, a pretty crappy webcam in it, I'm using the Metro version of Skype, mm-hmm. and I have Tweetro Plus.
You like Metro apps.
Over on the side. Mm-hmm. They're great. I have something snapped to the side of my screen all the time when I'm working. Even when I'm working on the desktop, I usually have either mail, messaging, or Twitter snapped to the side in a Metro app. And it works so much better than trying to arrange conventional desktop windows.
Did it take you a while to get used to?
It took me a little while to get used to, not as long as all that, but then again, like so many people who are in the situation that I'm in, we're beta testing stuff, we tend to live in the future. And so I've been living in the future as far as Windows 8 is concerned. The real problem was that it's taken a while for good apps to come along, and there's still not enough good modern UI style apps. Tweetro Plus is a really good one. There's one called Feed Reader. I want to give Sam, who's the author of that, I want to give him a plug here, and everyone should go out and buy that app because it's a great Google Reader client. And so you can, you know, have your Google Reader feed, your RSS feeds in a Metro style app. That's a really good one. The news apps that come with Windows 8, the Bing apps, news and sports, those are great. You know, they're really well designed. But there aren't. But I spend probably, I'd say, 70 to 80% of my time in the Windows desktop. Because that's where. That's where Office is.
But that might change over time as more Metro apps come out and so forth.
This is a marathon, not a sprint.
Right. Classic Shell. A lot of people have been telling me that this is a free app that basically turns off the Metro and turns on the desktop. There are a number of these.
Yeah, I wonder if Microsoft will make that.
Isn't there a checkbox? I tell you why, because they're all in on Metro. They want to force this issue. They don't want to give you a back door.
No, they want everybody in the new system.
They want everybody that way.
But there are at least five different alternatives for that. That's always been the way that Windows is. You want that feature? Do it. You want an alternative file explorer? Do it. There's like 15 different desktop style file explorers out there if you want that capability. One thing that I really appreciate that they've done with Windows 8 is to not do the click a checkbox and have one of four different options here. They said this is the interface, and there's also an API where if you want to do things differently, use a third party app and do it.
Boy, people hate change, though, right? I mean, isn't that the bottom line?
It's difficult.
People hate change, and I understand why they hate it.
Let's face reality about this. We don't want full screen. Most people have big monitors. We don't want a full screen app on a 30-inch monitor or something like that. You get this huge app, and it's just ludicrous. I mean, on Surface tablets, laptops, I could see, especially with a touchscreen or any touchscreen device, it makes some sense. But on a big, giant, you got two 29-inchers right there next to you, and boom, you got this whole thing chewed up by one giant app. It stinks.
That's why I don't use full-screen mode on Mountain
Mac,
Lion
Mac
on my big screen. It's the same thing. It's right. You go in that. I have two monitors, and the second monitor just gets the linen texture on it. The
it's
Apple completely
so
punts.
Horrible.
It's just like, forget it.
We can't handle it.
It's terrible. On an 11-inch laptop, it's fine.
They're fundamentally different experiences. I mean, so this is my work machine, and it's the little screen, which is one thing, and then I plug it into the giant display when I go to work, and it transforms it.
Yeah.
It's a very different working experience, and the Metro interface is, like you said, it's kind of cool on a single, smallish device. But also, how many people use a touchscreen like a touchscreen, a vertical touchscreen? Does that actually work?
In portrait mode, you mean?
Perpendicular to the keyboard, where you're doing this on the hands
thing. A giant
thing.
Monitor with a touchscreen.
Oh, like that crazy Sony thing that's a table?
No,
that's the way of the future. I mean, all monitors will be touchscreen pretty soon enough.
Well, I do think you should, if you're getting Windows 8, get a touchscreen, right? You would agree with that.
Yes, yeah, what it's made for.
Yeah. I find the laptops without touchscreens to be very frustrating on Windows 8.
I'm actually using the laptop that I'm using right here is one without a touchscreen. It has the touchpad drivers.
Yeah, so you're used to it is what you're saying. You figured it out, like charms, and you know all the keystrokes and everything.
It's not keystrokes, Leo. The touchpad,
it's touching.
Actually, if you swipe in from the right side of the touchpad, it's the same thing as swiping in from the right side of the touch screen. If you swipe in from the left side, it switches between your apps. If you swipe down from the top, it gives you the app bar for your
Metro. And that's how you do it. You like to do it that way. That's how you do it.
On this particular machine, it works. It works pretty well.
Okay.
I also have a couple of touchscreen laptops here, and those work really, really well. I wrote a post about a month ago about this whole Gorilla Arm thing. I'll tell you, if you use Windows 8 on a touchscreen laptop, the amount of space between the keyboard and the screen is about here, this much. It's, you know, maybe 3 or 4 inches that you can reach out and do things. And so what I've discovered in using maybe 8 or 10 different devices, which have touchscreens, touch-enabled trackpads that support gestures and such, keyboards and mice, is that you wind up using all of those input things. The mistake that people tend to make is that they think a touchscreen is the only way to interact with Windows 8. No, it's another way to interact with it.
I would agree with you on that. But I think when you don't have the touchscreen, I find myself touching the screen.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is we all get used to doing these gestures, right. And then when they're not there, it's upsetting.
Right.
That's like trying to shift an automatic car. That's
right.
Awkward.
Yeah. Oh, that wasn't what I meant. Yeah.
Most people aren't like us, and most people don't have an office full of different devices that they're constantly.
They have just one, and so they get used to how it works. I bet a lot of people have tablets though, as well as
phones,
a laptop.
Right? Smartphones.
Yeah. Sure.
And
so they're used to touching.
And little kids who are just not used to using anything but a touch device these days.
You guys have, I'm looking at all the Apple, the shiny Apple logos there. So all of you guys have an iPad and you have a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air. You're not frustrated and confused, Jason, by switching back and forth between those?
I'm not, but I will say that my wife, who's got a MacBook Air and an iPad, she said since she got her MacBook Air, she finds herself, and not with an iMac,
but with her MacBook,
she now will often be trying to do some swipe gestures and tapping on
it's
the screen.
It's an absent-minded thing.
Yeah, it just has to remember, I don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's especially true.
It's not the end of the world. You're right.
And that's especially true when you're using a browser-based app or one of the full-screen things in Mountain Lion, you know, the Mission Control and all that stuff, where it feels very iPad-like.
Yeah.
And there's big targets out there that just say, touch me, and then you do it, and all you do is get the screen dirty.
That's the danger if you mix the metaphors. If you have the same metaphors, which is obviously what Apple and Microsoft are both doing, and if you mix them but the input mechanisms don't match, it gets really weird. You know,
well,
I think this
is transitional.
We're in a messy time,
I think
right?
It is transitional.
It's messy.
I don't think, certainly Apple doesn't seem to believe that touchscreen is the dominant interaction, although the trackpad has a lot of those same gestures.
Same thing where you can sweep.
But as an additional gesture, it's not, you know, not unreasonable at all, because I know, having seen that in my own house, that it's true. People, once you get used to the swiping and tapping like that, you want to do it on the screen.
I would love to have it.
I can't imagine a future in which all personal computer screens are not touchscreens, even from Apple.
Exactly. Why not just do it? Might as well include it.
It's typical of Apple to say, this is wrong. It's just not going to work.
Until the day they release it.
We figured out a way to make it work. Here it is.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they do.
Exactly how it'll happen.
Yeah. And the backpedaling will be masterful.
They don't even backpedal. They just shift gears, right? It's it's good now.
I don't know if Tim Cook's as good at backpedaling as Steve Jobs. He was really a master of reality distortion field. Where, I never said that. You're wrong.
People don't want to watch video on an iPod. Oh, by the way, here's our iPod with video. Now they do.
We're going to get scroogled in just a minute. We've got Ed Bott here from ZDNet, from IDG. Jason Snell, he's the editorial director of both PC World and Macworld. So he knows where he's talking. He knows whereof he speaks. He's got one foot on each platform. Rafe Needleman, now at Evernote. How do you like that? You left CNET. You got out of the editorial world.
Yeah.
But everybody loves Evernote. I mean, it's just a wonderful... Phil Wyben's been on the show. I just think he's great.
It's a great place to work. I'm glad I went there. I mean, that's why people were playing the... when I was doing my podcast, the Rafe Needleman Evernote drinking game, and they were getting slapped. Every time I mentioned Evernote, you'd
mention
take a drink.
You mentioned it a lot, yeah.
I just decided to go pro.
So essentially, you wormed your way into a job by giving a lot of free publicity in advance of your asking for the job?
That is the
negative,
perfectly cynical way of looking at
very
it.
Very cynical.
And completely wrong. But
you know what's interesting?
But if I wasn't sitting next to you and I was writing about this, I'd say,
You know what's interesting? BlackBerry 10.
And then I document the number of times you mentioned Evernote.
You could say that and
there is no Evernote app on BlackBerry yet, right? Or is there?
There's an Evernote for BlackBerry. And
BlackBerry 10 has it kind of integrated in.
Yeah, it ships with an Evernote integration.
Evernote kind of is everywhere.
Yeah.
We
believe on being native on all platforms that matter.
I think that's very interesting. In fact, it makes me actually want to try BlackBerry 10.
Are you on Linux?
Only on the web.
He said platforms that matter.
Oh, wait. He said the word matter.
Fortunately, there's
no
web.
So now all you Linux people out there know what he thinks about your...
Here's my target. Shoot at me. Yeah, there is an API, and people have written Evernote
that's interesting.
Desktops or applications that for our API.
You know, Phil Lyben... And by the way, and I'm not taking a job with Evernote, but Phil Lyben once told me that 4% of all their referrals were by Leo Laporte. That I was such an Evernote flasher.
You should be on the board.
I don't have anything to do with them, I agree. It's very cool, and I go back pre Phil Lyben when it was
that roll
of toilet paper that went up the screen. Remember that?
So what do you use Evernote for?
To OneNote, I just stick everything in there. And the nice thing about having integration into your devices is it's very easy. You know, I have a little elephant on my menu bar. I have it in my phone and stuff. It's very easy just to put something in Evernote, and then you have it. There's lots of things you can do. I took a picture of a flower. I said, this is pretty. What is it? I took a picture of the flower in Evernote so that I could refer to it later. Just little things like that. When I am parking in the airport, I take a picture of my parking spot in Evernote so that I can get back to
my car. No, you don't use this thing to park, find my spot.
No, that's too complicated.
You just push a button, boom,
you're
there.
Yeah, but then it's got GPS, and you're like one of those idiots walking through the parking garage with your phone out, beep, 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 beep.
It's not a Geiger counter.
Everything wore down on the flight back as you were listening to music and your battery's dead, and you're going, God, I hope my battery doesn't die before I find my car.
That's why I don't use iPhones. I use Galaxy phones that I have three batteries for my Note. I just carry them with me, and it dies. I get another day out of another battery.
That's the biggest phone. That's a Note, right?
It's a Note 2, yeah.
Humongous.
Big is good.
Looks small when LeBron James holds it, though.
Yeah. That doesn't, for a long time people said, hold it to your head, and then they'd laugh. This doesn't look that bad.
You have a large head, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a really big head.
I swear, it doesn't look, it's not like holding an iPad to your head.
No, but that's next.
It is
actually,
next.
Actually, I just read the
story. The 7-incher.
Well, for minis especially, with Skype,
I think
a good phone.
That's my goal. I'm lobbying to get Apple to make a phone. The next iPhone should be a mini, and there are rumors that there will be a bigger iPhone that maybe is in between.
Apple's actually working on a stretchable
that would
phone
be good.
Pad, just whatever size
a
you want.
A little rubber phone. Yeah. We're going to get scroogled in just a little bit, but first, for those of you who are doing mailing, a tip to be a professional at mailing, stamps.com lets you print your own. Did you know postage is going up again?
It's a scam.
And now they don't want to do Saturday delivery?
It's a scam. I told you this before. They made them prepay.
They're not allowed to make
for
money.
Like decades of their retirement fund. They had to pre-fund it.
Right.
Like for decades.
Right.
And so it's breaking them. And then it's all.
But it's not a federal agency. It's privatized.
It's,
semi,
in, it's in the Constitution, though. We have to do
we
it.
We have to do it.
So what they're going to do is they're going to turn this over to FedEx, and you guys are thinking it's so funny to get rid of the mail, and then you're not, instead of paying 50 cents, you're going to be paying $8 get a letter out.
That's why you want to get stamps.com. You're going to keep the Postal Service alive. And by the way, there's still a lot of people who use the Postal Service, eBay and Etsy and Amazon, PayPal sellers, people who mail out invoices and stuff. That's where the Postal Service is a great deal. And when you have a stamps.com scale like this, And it automates your mailing. For anybody who does a lot of mailing.
You get the scale free?
You do, actually. The,
really?
It's a USB scale. It automates your mailing. So the idea is it'll
It uses MEMS.
It probably does use MEMS.
I'm sure it does.
That's interesting because there's no moving parts.
Right, it's MEMS.
So the micro, what is it, micro?
Electronic mechanical system. Electromechanical systems.
So they don't, it's like molecular level machines, basically. Because, yeah, this doesn't move. Yeah. It's not like there's like some in the old feet. Days of scales, you'd have to press something
it's
down
a
with
nano
a string.
Deal.
It's in the feet. The feet move.
Oh, you're kidding.
The little rubber feet.
No, they don't. Yeah, like you're such a liar.
What? The old one did. That's those how the old one works.
No, this is the new one. I'm telling you. It's MEMS.
Yeah, so totally MEMS.
Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk about stamps.com. Print your own postage. You could print. What?
No, I'm just saying it's plausible.
It is plausible. It's MEMS.
You can also use it as a trackpad.
It's cool looking. What else? You get discounts you can't get at the post office. The mail carrier comes and gets the stuff, so you don't have to get up from your desk. You could take the address from your address book, your QuickBooks, or eBay, Amazon, PayPal, websites, all of that stuff. Now, wait a minute. Now, you see that $80 value on the front page there, that special offer? Don't do that. Click the microphone and enter in the offer code TWIT. That $80 special offer turns into a $110, TWIT, that's the offer code, a $110 bonus offer, $55 of free postage, the digital scale, $5 supply kit, and a picture of me. 4-week trial. I'm a stamps.com user since the turn of the century. That's how long I've been using stamps.com. You know why? Because they used to have these, and I think they still do. They used to have these. I had my picture on a stamp. Do you remember that? They you get photo stamps.
Doesn't Zappos still make those things?
Somebody may. I think Stamps still does it. Yeah, it is. It's on the website. Photo stamps.
Yeah, you want to photo.stamps.com. You want your own picture on.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, if you're a complete egomaniac. I think so you put some cool pictures on
I
there.
I think
though.
It's illegal to put a commercial message on a stamp.
Right.
Which has not stopped people from actually doing
trying
it.
Trying it. Yeah. But, yeah, you wouldn't want to do that.
You should be on the board. We're going to put you on every board now.
I want to be on the board.
You should be on the board.
No, I don't want to be on the board. Stamps.com, I want you to take advantage of the trial offer. That's all I ask. And we thank them for their support. Tom Merritt has been following the stories of the coming week and has this update for us, Mr. Merritt.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. D-Dive into Media starts at the Ritz-Carlton in Southern California, Laguna Niguel. That's going to be going on for a couple of days, February 11th and the 12th. On February 12th, the 11th Usenic Conference on File and Storage Technologies takes place. It's also Lincoln's birthday. Wednesday, February 13th, Windows Live Mesh closes. So hopefully you got your data out of that. February 14th is Valentine's Day, so don't buy any chocolates or flowers on that day. You'll pay way too much. Friday, February 15th is the birthday of YouTube. It debuted in 2005. And Saturday, February 16th, SimCity hosting another closed beta. Mm. And Nintendo intends to merge its handheld and console divisions. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Live Mesh, we hardly knew ye.
I was using that before it was a Microsoft
product. We're using it as a sync product?
Folder share. Byte Taxi, when then Microsoft bought and slowly squeezed to death until now it's just a floppy corpse.
So some people use it.
Tight.
I'm sorry, just sneeze. Some people, I brought back a cold from New Orleans, but it's the end. It's the tail end, so it's okay. I brought that and Beyonce back with me. So no, the finger lasers, not Beyonce herself. So the idea with this was it would sync. It's a sync. Was a sync tool.
Well, the original Folder Share was a sync tool that didn't sync to the cloud because I'm so old. I remember before there was a cloud.
Got it.
So it's actually if you had two computers on at the same time, it would sync. If one of them was not on, no sync.
Ah, it was peer to peer.
Yes.
Which but they've now integrated the cloud. In fact, that's the whole point, is that they want to use SkyDrive instead.
Right.
Ed, what happens if you have mesh data? You lose it, right, when they turn the server off.
Well, yeah, but they've been warning about this for about a year and a half. anybody who – and the Windows Live Mesh user base was small and geeky, and they are the kind who know, who have already gone to their
office. They've
already migrated. What's the point of turning it off?
There's like five people left. They've done the right thing here. They've done that. But interesting, Rafe's history is accurate, but it misses one little thing there. At the time, I remember this because we wrote about it in one of our books. At the time, Microsoft had either four or five competing synchronization solutions.
Yep.
That they were offering,
mm-hmm.
And it was classic Microsoft of the early to mid 2000s. Just throw a bunch of crap out there and see which ones survive.
Mm.
And what they've done with SkyDrive, to their credit, is to throw away all of the weird competing alternatives and focus on one service, put some resources behind it, and build a good solid base on it, and then start expanding the features incrementally so that every quarter there's a new release for it. Every year there's a major new wave of it where you get new features. So if you compare SkyDrive today to what it was 6 months ago, a year ago, 18 months ago, the progression has been profound.
Well, Microsoft really is desperate. They desperately have to do this because they've had competing systems and they've had a various pricing options that were impossible to keep track of. And I mean, I wanted to use some of this stuff, and I went into it, and I couldn't figure. I mean, I was like, here, Microsoft, please help me sync my stuff. And about a year ago, it was incomprehensible. So finally narrowing down the product sets is the right thing to do. Hopefully they can keep this thing going. It's an important product. Important to have Cloud Sync.
Microsoft's back with their... This is the Microsoft show. We'll do some Mac stuff, too.
And by the way, they announced this week 1 billion documents stored on SkyDrive. And also a new feature that they announced this week, which is very welcome, is you can put a document up there now, make it public, and anyone can, if you want them to, can edit that document without having to sign in with a Microsoft account. So, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Although they really do want you to get a Microsoft account.
Yeah. Why
right.
not?
Why not? It's free. Why not? I'll tell you why you don't get a Gmail account, because you'll get Scroogled. They're back with the Scroogled campaign this time. First Scroogled campaign was about Google Shopping. Is this an outside agency doing these Scroogled campaigns? What is it? What is the deal with this? This time it's Gmail. Think Google respects your privacy? Think again. It's FUD.
It's dumb.
The thing about this stuff is the consumers, they'll get up in arms and they will, at least in my experience, convincing consumers to act, not care, not say they care, but actually act on threats about privacy and security and hacking.
But there's a petition right here. You can sign a petition that says...
You can sign a petition. People will sign a petition and then not change their email system. That's what they'll do.
That's true. You're right. It's absolutely true.
I got to point out, and by the way, there's only... this Scroogle thing's been going on for a week. There's 4,000 signatures.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
It's not really exactly... have traction. Yeah. But so beside that, the petition is tell Google to stop going through your email to sell ads. Obviously, Microsoft doesn't really want Google to stop doing that because that's a competitive advantage for Microsoft. But I should point out that Microsoft goes through your email. They just don't do ads. They do it for spam and other reasons. Everybody goes... If you have anti-spam on an email system, it's got to go through your email.
Yeah.
It's not a human reading the email. It's a computer algorithm. Looking for keywords, whether they target ads or not.
I mean, there are reasons that you might not want to get ads based on the content of your email. There are plenty of good reasons.
It's not like a human being is reading your email.
It's free. I mean, Gmail is free.
Why is spam going through your email for spam to fight spam any different than going through your email to present ads, to target ads? Ed.
Well, one is just a look. It has every email system has to go through, and it has to process the server that it came from, and the address that it came from to display that to you. There's certain things that any web based service has to do, but then it does it. It makes a decision. It takes an action, and then it moves on without storing that. That's the difference. Look, this campaign...
That's not what this campaign says. It says Google goes through every Gmail it sent or received looking for keywords so they can target you with paid ads.
And that is true. It's a legitimate issue. It's a corny... It's a cornball campaign. But the underlying issue is real. Look, Google's revenue stream is advertising.
Right.
They get between 94 and 97% of their revenues from advertising, and they get it from Gmail. That one of the services that they get it from. They want you to use their services because they want to collect the data and use it to build a profile of you that they can use to make more effective advertising. That's a fact. That's a real issue.
So what's wrong with that?
Take away the cornball campaign, and you have a potential real privacy issue.
Good thing Google isn't evil.
I mean, all right.
But let me tell you something else, just to take the other side of the argument here. Google does go through and index your email and makes it searchable, which means when you are searching the web now with Google, it will now optionally also search your email.
I turned that on because I like that.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So not only do you find what you're looking for on the web, but you find what you're looking for that somebody sent you 2 years ago.
But they have to read my email to do that.
That's right.
Exactly.
But the point is,
it's a great feature.
Nobody's reading your email. It's all a machine anyway.
At the moment.
Google's has a clone farm where they're breeding email readers.
Here's the problem, Leo. I spend a lot of time working with privacy issues. And this isn't a Microsoft versus Google thing. This is a big corporations versus people issue. The trouble with all of this is that information about you is being collected. It's being hoovered in by everything you do on the web. And if it were only being stored in cookies and used to display targeted ads, then maybe you could say that it doesn't matter. But the fact is, these data points about you, these profiles of you, are being created, and then they're being correlated with offline profiles, and they are being used to influence things in your life. And we're at a point right now, this is like climate change was 30 years ago.
What things in my life
what does
are they
climate
in,
change have to do
what
with
things
it?
In my, no, I understand what he's saying, which is there's this tip of the iceberg, there's a big unknown.
By the time 10 years from now, by the time you realize
it'll
how
be too
much
late.
Information has been collected about right. you, it's going to be too late.
But what things are they influencing? I mean, really, what is the impact of this? I keep asking this question. John keeps coming up with the insurance thing.
That's one of the things. Absolutely.
Deny you insurance.
Saw Leo break the desk. You've got to give the raises insurance.
I saw this ad to State Farm,
risky.
Said you could put this thing in your car into the OBD port, and it would track your...
Guess what?
Track you. That's going to become mandatory for insurance. That's terrifying.
This is going on right now. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has proposed rules that would mandate event data recorders in all new cars and light trucks. Guess when the period for comment ends?
Yesterday.
Tomorrow. So
data recorders are one thing. It's the non-event recorders. It's just the log of how fast you drive, how
aggressively. That's what this records.
Event data are if there's a wreck, it records. It's like a crash.
In theory.
Right. The question is.
Here's what they collect. Vehicle speed, engine, throttle position, brake use, driver safety belt status, airbag warning lamp status, changes in velocity, continuous. The rule says there's a minimum amount of data. There's no maximum amount of data. They can collect data for the entire lifetime of the car.
You know what I want? I want that piped into my Google so I get ads based on what a jerk of a driver I am.
Well, thank goodness Microsoft PSAs, is looking out for all of us on this. And all just a cynically motivated way to promote their own email service. This really is like climate change. They're looking out for the common good.
I'll give you the prediction, of course, where this is really going to head, is that you have to go get your car smogged all the time. And these guys are always looking for new income streams. So they'll get a piece of the action at the smog joint.
They download the
by
stuff.
By busting you for speeding because they know exactly where you were. You were doing 78 miles an hour on the freeway. It's a 65-mile-an-hour zone. You now have to pay X amount of money. And they have you dead to rights.
Well,
you're testifying against yourself, and they're going to use this to crank up their revenues.
We're going to sell a lot of self-driving cars, isn't it?
You'll get real-time. This will sell a lot of self-driving cars. You'll get real-time tickets. You won't have to hoover up the data. The data will be transmitted into the cloud.
Forget a red light camera. Tickets. You got my black box.
Where are our tinfoil hats, by the way?
I'll bet you this happens here, but it doesn't happen in Europe.
because they are very privacy concerned.
Much stricter privacy regulations.
Yeah, they wouldn't let that
so, happen. Ed, you agree this is we another problem?
Handmaid's Tale comes true.
This is a serious problem. Take the corny Microsoft campaign out of it. I agree it's corny campaign. There's good and bad reasons to choose an email service, but this is a serious issue.
Okay. From a larger point of view.
I think it's much
from
more
a
likely.
From a larger privacy point of view.
And Microsoft, because their business model is to sell hardware and software, doesn't really care. So we should trust them.
It isn't a matter of trust. It isn't a matter of trusting them. It's a matter of saying there's one company.
Well, I should use no web. I should use no web email if I don't trust the company.
Right, and ideally you should use products that aren't free. Because right. If they're free, they're
then
making
you're the,
money off
you're the
of
product.
You.
Yeah.
That's right. You're the product. No, I that's why I pay for email. And like Rafe said something really good back there. He said, I want access to this information for myself. That's the way it should work.
Oh, doesn't
this
Google do that with their be, dashboard? Don't
this
they
information
tell you?
Should be collected, yep. And it should be compartmentalized and available only to you. But the reality is that
free.
It's going to be aggregated and profiled and made available, and we're not going to know for another 10 years how horrible the impact of all of this stuff is going to be. Forget Gmail. Forget Hotmail. Let's talk about every time you visit a website and all of this information that's being collected.
I just want somebody to tell me something real that's going to happen to me in 10 years because I didn't care. This insurance thing is bogus. What else?
No, it's not. That's the real.
You ever notice how Progressive is the most interesting company because they're the ones who, before they became an insurance company, and I know this because I went there to give a speech once and they gave me the long lecture. They were a major actuarial company that used the computer systems that were available to them to really much, pretty much predict what was going to happen to you based on where you lived and how old you were and all the other background stuff. And that's why when they became an insurance company, they could do the bit where we'll give you all the estimates of all the companies and you can pick us or not.
Because they knew them all.
Because they knew they knew what you were really worth, which was their number. And there are people that they will send you to some other lowballer because
they don't want you.
They don't want you because the lowballer will take a beating on you.
Right.
This used to be called redlining.
Right. When the banks would not lend right. to black neighborhoods because
to black neighborhoods, to minority neighborhoods, right. So you could have an absolutely stellar credit record. You could have a perfect property, but you would be redlined, and as a result, you would have to pay an interest rate that would be 2, 3, 4 points higher than somebody else, or you couldn't get a loan at all. Redlining is going to go from what used to be a little tiny thing in the mortgage industry to affecting just about everything. We're already seeing it in online markets for things like travel and merchandise. You're already seeing prices that are being offered to people based on their online profile. And so if they see that you're a risk or see that you're that you're rich, Leo, they look at you and they see, hey, this guy.
Dollar
sign.
Why do people think I'm rich? What is this? Look at me. I'm wearing a nice old-fashioned wool coat.
You know, we're going to put an extra zero on the end of your price tag. The point is, all of the mechanisms for doing this kind of—
That would explain my Super Bowl tickets,
discrimination. all the mechanisms for all of the big data collection is out there. You know, the trouble is— all of this data is being collected now by organizations that have no idea what they're going to do with it. If you talk to privacy experts about this, people who are not in the advertising industry but who are in the privacy industry, they'll tell you that companies are collecting data like there's no tomorrow, and they're just storing it because they know that it's valuable.
What do we do? How do we fight this?
Well, one thing that you do is you install products on your computer that prevent information from leaking out. It's, you know, things like there's Abinds, Do Not Track Plus, there's Privacy Fix.
You running all this stuff, Ed?
There's Ghostery. I use.
It's like too much work.
It's a lot of work.
It's too much work.
It's a lot of work. Does anybody else do this? Are you doing any of this?
I used to use Ghostery, but it has so many.
It tells you all this stuff.
It drops a thing the size of a blimp on your thing.
I think we should all move to the hills. Stop using. We only use gold, and stop being online.
Pull out and nuke the site for more. But it's the only way to be sure.
We all laughed at Al Gore 10 years ago about global warming. Ha ha ha!
I still laugh at him.
And guess what?
We all laugh.
Yeah.
There's a guy worried about global warming. He's living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Move north, my friend. Washington State.
Climate change.
I'll grant you. There's a potential for this, and I just wonder: is there anything we can do about it, or is it already too late? We do governmental intervention. The government doesn't want this.
They don't care.
That's why they want these EDRs.
They might want to subpoena it.
No, they want. That's what I'm saying. They don't want us to protect our privacy. The more they know, the better.
Yeah. So it makes it easier for them.
So they're not going to legislate against this. Should I move to Europe?
Yes.
Well, I think what's going to happen is we're going to have a world where there are people who are concerned about privacy and are going to spend money, and the people who don't have the money to spend aren't going to have privacy. I think that's where we're headed.
The people who don't have money to spend aren't.
Get a lawyer.
Is a world where privacy laws are dictated by Europe. Thank God. And so they're going to set the standard, and we're going to follow along because the lawmakers in this country are paying zero respect to privacy issues. And so thankfully, Europe is leading the way on a lot of this stuff. And because the internet is global, and because it's too expensive to put together systems that have one set of rules for Americans and another set of rules for Germans and another set of rules for people in India, the most restrictive set of rules is going to be the one that tends to dictate the behavior of large corporations like Microsoft and Yahoo and Google. And notice I said it in that order so that no one would accuse me of discriminating. But the reality is that we should be thankful for the fact that the European Union right now is paying attention to privacy issues and actually having an impact on these things.
Give us an example of the impact.
The data collection rules that are in place for Europe are dictating a lot of the ways that data is being collected and stored in major websites today. So that's a way that
Google seems to be grabbing everything it can in every which way, including all your mail. And I don't see them being changing by at least through the American customers at all. And how is this going to affect the black box on the car or anything else? I don't think that the Europeans, which who do have a lot of privacy limitations, are going to affect us at all. We're going to get scammed anyway.
Well, I don't know. Remember at the start of the show, Leo, you said that you thought I was turning into the next John Dvorak. I'm nowhere near as cynical as John. Yeah.
Yet. All right.
Well, yet.
You know, listen to No Agenda Show.
NoAgendaShow.com.
That's where you'll get the deal. Speaking of deals, Michael Dell, who's worth I didn't know he was worth $16 billion. He's done all right. But still not enough to take Dell private. He's managed to raise the money. Some of it from Microsoft, a $2 billion loan.
He only put in $500,000 from what I can tell.
Really?
Well, I mean, $500 million.
$500 million.
That's all.
There's a difference.
Well, I mean, for a guy with $16
billion. He's only 1/32nd of his entire value. It says, according to a deal book, that he put in $700 million of his fortune.
Oh.
I Dell back.
And Silver Lake Partners is putting in some, and Microsoft's loaning them $2 billion to go private. Which is a very interesting thing to do, I guess.
Public or private, where does Dell go?
Well, that's the question. Is it somehow, because you have to reveal to stakeholders what you're up to every quarter, is that somehow tying his hands?
That's what they say.
Sarbanes-Oxley is keeping him from taking over the computer world?
Well,
is that possible?
If Dell stock is cheap and he believes there's a future, then this is a good way to get in there.
Well,
and
Apple's doing that, too. They're buying back stock.
He's only buying $700 million. I mean, He's hardly putting anything in, to be honest about it.
He's got leverage. He doesn't have to put it in.
Yeah, but they're not going to give him the company for the leverage. Right. I mean, he's not going to be a
51%. He's fine. He's got plenty of money, but he clearly doesn't.
He's bailing out.
You think this is bailing out?
Yeah, that's my opinion, because he doesn't seem like he's, I don't know, looks like bailing out to me.
By taking it private as a bailout?
And why does Microsoft?
Most of the money comes.
That's
to him,
a weird.
Why does Microsoft stock, put right? in $2 billion?
So
and Microsoft
have
says
to buy his stock, and he's going to put a pittance back in. It looks like you're getting out to me.
There will be $15 billion in debt.
He doesn't care.
Because Silver Lake's only putting a billion. Microsoft's putting
a billion. He'll probably maintain control for a while. Then he'll be retired in 3 years. They would go do something else.
So this is clever of Mr.
Leo, you should be on the board.
I don't want to be on this board. He left for a while, remember? He came back in 2007 to run the company because it was going into the ground.
Try to save it.
Yeah. Didn't work.
Partly because just the margins in the PC industry are so low, thanks to the the netbook.
I've talked to him recently, and for the last two or three years, he's been trying to tell everybody who'd listen, which apparently was nobody, that they're not a PC company anymore.
Right.
The PC thing was only just a little...
That was temporary.
No, it was there it's was a big services company that modeled themselves out.
Even Microsoft says IBM. It's a services company now.
Yeah. But the media keeps calling them a PC company.
Damn them.
Which just
stupid media.
Those idiots in the media.
Those morons. Don't they know that Dell's a service company? By the way, Microsoft is a devices and services company. It says so on their webpage. Devices and services. See?
I actually wrote the very first post highlighting the fact that they were making that transition.
Yeah. Why is everybody so afraid of being a PC company?
This is the way that all big tech most of the big hardware companies.
IBM became a service.
Somebody contradicted me in the chat room saying that he's putting all his stock in. I have not heard this. If you can give me a link, I renege on my assertion that he's getting out of the company if he's
dumping he wouldn't have anything left.
All his stock in.
He's betting his entire stake in the company and $700 million in cash.
Well, it gives him some control and maybe some insulation about getting replaced, right? He goes to his buddies and he gets the investors, and then he can run it and he can make decisions without worrying about the market reacting badly to it, he can just stay
right. Because clearly, if you're a PC vendor,
that short-term focus. That's the thing that
quarterly focus. I can't plan ahead. Yeah,
we have to focus on this quarter's results.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we'll see what he does.
What could he do?
He could repackage the company, change the name, then do some IPO thing, get out at that point.
Bring back the Dell dude.
The Dell dude's been in the news wanting to come back.
He said, I know how to save Dell. You just bring me back.
Yep. Yeah.
They fired him because he was selling pot.
Yeah, right.
Or buying pot.
Doing something with pot.
Something with pot. I know there was a pot involved in there somewhere. He says, I can save Dell, dude. Ben Curtis is his name. He was once arrested for trying to buy marijuana in New York. He says, I think they're making a huge mistake and they simply need to bring back the Dell dude. That's it. That's all they need to do. If they brought me back, their sales stock and media presence would skyrocket.
What's up, Mr. Foster? I go in for a PC. I come out with a migraine. You ask for this, all they have is that. Makes your head spin.
Well, your computer quandary is easily solved by the folks at Dell. Just call or go online. They'll help you figure it out. So you know what you're getting and what you're getting.
I ask a question? Why did they get mad this guy was buying pot? He's obviously stoned.
He stole that convertible,
I don't
too.
Know. I don't know. To be honest about it, I thought it was dumb to get rid of him.
Right, because obviously a good marketing campaign makes up for a commodity product.
Apple. We should talk about Apple. So why is, by the way, we now know it is legal to jailbreak but illegal to unlock. This is strange. Librarian of Congress says, no, actually you can't unlock unless you've exceeded your term of service.
Right, yes.
But you can jailbreak. That's explicitly permitted by the DMCA.
Yep.
What does that even mean? What's the difference?
Okay. Jailbreaking gives you access to things that Apple doesn't want you to have access on the devices. Yeah, you can add non-approved apps and things like that. Unlock specifically means you can change your carrier. And the idea there is that since you're buying a phone that's subsidized by the carrier, that for the terms of the agreement with the carrier, you need to stay.
That seems
you need
fair.
To stay with them. But you can jailbreak it.
Fair. Except for the fact that carriers are crooks.
So when Apple put out iOS 6.1, it didn't take long for the jailbreak to be updated. Evasion, in fact, is now the most popular jailbreak ever. 7 million iOS devices were hacked in 4 days.
Now, that is roughly 0.0001% of iOS devices, but it is sort of stable, non-tethered. You could jailbreak iOS 6 before, but every time you rebooted, you had to plug it back into a computer by USB, and now it's a standalone jailbreak again. Mm-hmm. So the jailbreak community is celebrating.
How about Apple? How do they feel about it?
You know, I think Apple posted a tech note that said, don't do this. Right? Just, it's
if you
bad.
Do this, the terrorists
we
win.
We can't support it. Yeah, what I've heard from win. App developers is that they've seen a massive increase in piracy as a part of it, because that is part of the jailbreak community, is the tools to enable you to easily pirate apps are there. Mm-hmm. It's not the only reason to jailbreak. We ran a story on Macworld the other day about why, you know, a lot of our editors do it for lots of good reasons, but there is also piracy behind a lot of it, because it's much easier to run pirated apps through a jailbreak. Jailbroken.
Where'd you get them shoes? I could tell you where you got them shoes. You want to know where you got them shoes?
No, I don't care.
You got them on your feet.
$20, John.
Jake, I'm such an idiot. Lisa's even pushing me. She said, no, don't talk to him. I said, no, but I want to know. How would he know how I got where I got them
oh,
shoes?
Please.
I
got
to find out. I got to know. Okay, this is a big, big breaking story. Just happened today. It's all over Tech Meme. The Nick Bilton in the New York Times, a regular on this show, says Apple is developing a curved smart glass watch. A Dick Tracy watch, if you will. You know, it's funny because...
For all you very elderly people who Ryan know who
Block
Dick Tracy
of,
is.
Ryan Block of Gadget said when Apple pulled the iPod Nano out, you know, the small one, and put it out, a big one... That no, this is Apple saying, don't make watches out of this.
Right.
We're going to make a watch.
Right.
Maybe he was right.
Maybe that was a terrible watch, though. I mean, you had to turn it.
It was horrible.
Right? I mean, it was
bad as a watch.
It was bad as a watch. Yes. It was a fine Nano, but yeah. bad as a watch.
And then all the people who had it, all the geeks who had the little
they bought band. The band. It was like their first Kickstarter project that really took off.
Yep.
Yeah, the Lunatic and all of those. Yeah. And you know, this report is that they're experimenting. Well, Apple experiments with lots of
stuff.
It
means nothing.
I think it's intriguing. I think a wearable thing that's really integrated. I actually have my Pebble with me here.
Ooh.
Which is
you're wearing a Pebble. Yeah. Mine hasn't come yet.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk later. And it's cool.
Were you
a very early Kickstarter?
Yeah, like April 11th or something like that. And it's black, which was the first ones they made.
I'm getting a red one. That's why.
So you have to wait for the color. But you know, it's fine, but it's rudimentary because there's only so much that Apple has integrated into notifications into the Bluetooth stack on iOS. And Android is differently yet similarly rudimentary. It's different stuff it doesn't do.
The idea is that your phone talks to this watch and says you got a text message.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody
sends me a text and my watch vibrates. It's
put
not
your arm right here. We can get a picture of it.
And it's not huge and awful like I thought it would be.
And I like the e-ink. It's over there.
That's a pretty big watch.
You reach all the way over there. Look at that. I like the e-ink.
So it's not e-ink. It's e-paper, which is a much faster refresh.
Ah.
And, you know, it tells the time.
It's not ungodly huge. No, I mean, compare it to my watch, it's actually tiny. So there you go. It's not bad.
Oh, no.
And you like it?
I do. It tells the time. That's the most important thing a watch can do. And then it's got some other features that are on the way. But it's going to be limited to what is supported by the OSs.
Course.
And the advantage of an Apple watch would be that Apple would obviously completely integrate it with their operating system.
The wrist real estate is like wide open right now. Because,
Well, wait a minute.
Some people don't wear watches.
How many of you in our audience are wearing wristwatches now?
Is there anyone?
Young ones don't wear wristwatches.
Yeah.
No, seriously. How many people you're wearing a wristwatch? Nope, that's just a...
See?
But it's a band.
And there's no advertising message there.
Nobody,
wide open.
Nobody in our audience, one kid is wearing... Eli is our intern. He's wearing a wristwatch because your phone tells you the time.
Yeah, but you know, I don't like to fish into my pocket and pull it out and orient it properly and press the button. And I know that's like 2 seconds that I've wasted there. It's not a lot of time in the grand scheme of things.
Look
at
our... You know, unscientific market survey here. Nobody in our audience, it's about 20 people in our audience, none of them are
wearing
wristwatches.
The wristwatch market is hurting.
Sure.
It is. I mean, except for luxury watches actually are not hurting.
No, if it's jewelry, it's different.
But a watch is something that says, I don't need to wear this.
Right.
It's a one percenter device.
Yes.
But I think there's some potential, especially when you look at things like the Nike... You know, the Nike band and all that now. Yeah. Leo's much cooler now. He's taken
off
his watch.
Watch.
I think there's some opportunity if you build in some features for people to say it's good to have something on my wrist
so I don't have
to find my phone.
How long does the battery charge last on that baby?
Well, I've only had it for about
four days,
but they say it'll last a week.
It's not daily. It's like a few days.
I take it off at night anyway. So
is it easy to
charging it? Yeah, charging it once a week. We'll see how it does.
See, here's what I want Apple to do, and actually I wouldn't put it past them because batteries with watches is the big problem. Is that this is something that you throw into the box with your change and your keys, and you don't want to worry about charging it. And I had a spot watch for a while. That was just a joke. And
oh, the spot was
Wim
horrible.
Watch, which was daily.
Wim, yeah.
Apple could. Oh, the Apple Watch is gorgeous. Did they ever come out?
Yeah, it did. It's terrible. Yeah. Your Bluetooth pairing is awful. It doesn't have functionality.
Anyway,
I think it's the same limitation Pebble's going to suffer, which is if you can't get access to that information.
Right, but for 100 years, we have had self-winding watches.
Yep.
And Seiko actually made an electronic self-winding watch.
Like you charge up a battery?
No. You use the motion of your wrist.
Yeah.
It's called an automatic watch. You use the motion of your wrist to turn a flywheel.
Right.
And that flywheel generated, in this particular case, electricity. It used to be mechanical power, now electricity.
Yeah, this is self-winding, but it's mechanical.
Right.
Right.
But that's energy, and that energy could be converted into power. And I'm just saying, Apple, if you're going to do it, make it perpetual. That would be awesome.
Perpetual motion.
Tim Cook wears a Nike Fuel Band. That's a watch as well as a measurement device. There was at CES, there were quite a few booths dedicated to bands, straps, and watches that monitor health, including one that did blood oxygen, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Right, they're not all watches, but there are lots of these wearable devices that are tracking your movement. It's working as a pedometer. Maybe it's checking your blood oxygen. Maybe it's checking your pulse.
And Corning has this willow glass that bends.
Yeah, that's the new stuff.
That will curve around. So that's this rumor mostly comes from Foxconn. And so, see, that's why it's meaningless, because as you said,
they'll get the parts and then try them out and say, well, this
prototype.
Doesn't work, right? I mean, they test lots of crazy stuff out at Apple. But I do think Bruce Tognazzini, who used to be at Apple as a big UI guy, wrote a long, 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 very, very, very long, I can't emphasize how long,
apparently,
read it later.
It's very long.
Piece about why Apple should do a smartwatch. And he makes a lot of really good points. There's a lot of potential there. How realistic
it's a better
it is,
product than
know.
A TV.
Maybe.
Than an Apple TV. I think that's a crazy product.
I mean, it would be a nice accessory for them to sell along with iPhones and iPads.
Well, there's
a lot more profit to be made from a TV than a watch.
Is there? Is there?
Is there?
Once is there, it? John?
Is there?
Is there?
Tell that to
it's
Sharp. Tell that to Pioneer. Tell that to Sony. The Japanese companies have been going bankrupt making big TVs.
Yeah, but they don't have Apple's cachet. And potential for high margins.
Yeah. I wonder, though. I mean, I think the new Apple market is all in these cheap iOS devices.
So you think everything's going downhill, going to the cheap.
Yeah. Although, interestingly, and we'll get to it in a second, there is a rumor that the Mac Pro actually is real.
Or something like it.
Or something like it. But first, a word from Carbonite.com. If you've got a computer, you got to back it up. You may put your watch, your Pebble on before I steal it. I ordered the red one.
Yeah,
that's why you're waiting. I don't have it.
That's why you're waiting.
Fool that I am.
You're a slave to fashion.
I am. I am a slave. You can tell when you look at me. I'm a slave. It's fashion week here at Twit. That's why the table broke.
And that's why there's all the plaid.
I was going to do the catwalk.
Runway.
Plaid's back. Grunge. I'm bringing grunge back to tech podcasting. I'm sorry. I can't cut out podcasting. Tech netcasting. We'll talk about that off the air. Carbonite.com. It's a backup solution, my friends. That works Mac or PC automatically, continuously in the background to get your data up on the cloud where it's safe. And, by the way, where you can access it anytime. It's the most affordable cloud storage. We talk about SkyDrive. We talk about iCloud. We talk about Dropbox. But unlimited backup for less than $5 a month for $59 a year. That's pretty good. And with their free apps, you can access it anytime or just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer, get those files. Plus, when disaster happens, it's very easy to restore them. Now, don't take my word for it. I want you to try Carbonite right now. Go to Carbonite.com, click the Try It Free button, and use our offer code, which is TWIT, and you get 2 weeks free. You don't need a credit card. You're not going to give them any personal information. Just offer code TWIT. If you decide you like it and you then decide to buy it, you'll get 2 months free, 14 months for the price of 12 when you subscribe. They do have small business plans, plans for external drives and so forth. But the basic plan is $59 per computer, flat fee. They're all flat rate, and they're just great. Carbonite.com. The offer code is TWIT. Did Ed come back? Were you turning on a light, Ed? Because now you're just basically a floating balloon head. Is he there? There he is. He's a floating head. You like working in the dark?
It was one of those days. Oh, now John's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, John's decided to turn on the invisibility shield. I'll tell you what. While John is looking for something he can steal, that's what he does. He gets up in the middle of every show and looks for something he can take home.
Usually a bottle of Pinot.
Did you find anything, John? Let's take a look at what you missed if you missed Twit this week.
Previously on Twit, i5 for the iPhone.
Today's going to be our best show ever. I just have a feeling. But please try to keep your voices down because I've got a tiny little Super Bowl hangover.
Windows Weekly.
I'm holding up my Surface right now, and right next to where the magnets are, there are these two weird little connectors, and that's what they were talking about. Like, and they were pretty much hinting, like, we've got some things coming that might help you with your battery life on this. So,
yeah, there are little connection plates in there that don't exist in the RT version.
Before you buy,
so let's say you're zoned out. What happens to the ears?
They just kind of flop.
They fold over.
Yeah, they relax and they just bend over to the sides.
And you're obviously very interested in what's going on.
Yeah.
Gizwiz.
1, 2, 3. Whoa! Whoa!
That's the human slingshot. After the show, we're gonna try
this it. This is dangerous.
Kid tested, mother approved.
That's a freak mode.
They just, Web2788 in the chat room just pointed out, Sarah's going to be kind of mad when she realizes I broke her table. This is what she uses for i5. It could be in trouble. I didn't even think of the repercussions. Yeah. So there's a reseller who says Mac Forever. Apple apparently told, this is in Mac Forever, France Systems, a new range of Mac Pro will be released in spring 2013.
Yeah.
This is like third hand.
Didn't Tim Cook already say that?
Yeah. No. What he said was a little... He said
something in 2013, there will be a product that makes Mac Pro users happy.
That's not necessarily a Mac Pro.
No, I think he very specifically didn't say it was going to be a Mac Pro. It might be, but it might be something new that
new
replaces...
New keyboard.
That cheese grater has been around.
It could be the iMac. It could be that iMac, that thin iMac. That should make you happy.
Well, iMac, make a Mac Pro graphic boards.
There'll be a Pro, there'll be something that speaks to the Pro users. They will do that, and spring is not a bad speculation.
WWDC is around that time. Yeah. It could be WWDC.
But I think that report is not coming from anywhere other than some assumptions about...
That's just bogosity. Yeah.
What's odd is that in Europe, the Cheese Grater Pro is illegal.
It's gone. Yes, they stopped selling it.
In Europe.
Like last week.
Why?
Cheese lovers.
It doesn't... Go ahead.
It's so... This is my turf. This is old school for me. It's so old and unupgraded over the years, the Mac Pro. And all Mac Pro users, sigh about this, that even the most recent upgrade was not much of an upgrade. It's so old that the electrical stuff in it is now against EU regulations. And Apple's not going to bother upgrading it because, obviously, it's at the end of its life.
The fan doesn't have protection. You could hurt yourself with the blade.
Does the hand crank still work on it?
The hand crank works fine, but it could backfire on you and then it would
break
you in the
thumb.
Head. Break your thumb.
Yeah.
It's Amendment 1 of Regulation IE60950/1, second edition, which becomes effective March 1st.
Classic.
Well, that's why the app wants to do something.
This is such bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And yet,
straight from Brussels.
The funniest thing is Apple declined to fix it. They just said, whatever.
That's because they're bringing out a new product.
Yeah, there'll be a new product, and it's so old that they've obviously moved on, and all they've been doing is replacing the processors in it every year or two. It doesn't do Thunderbolt even now.
Right.
Yeah, but Apple does need a super high-end device for content producers.
There's a lot of feeling, though, in the pro world that Apple's leaving them behind because of Final Cut and so forth. You don't think so?
Yeah, the new Final Cut's nothing compared to the old Final Cut when they replace this product.
Right. The new Final Cut is... amateur hour.
Yeah.
A lot of pro editors are moving to Premiere.
But Apple makes their money on hardware. So if there's a really good piece of software from somebody else and they have to buy Mac Pro 2s or whatever they are, Apple's happy.
And boy, they are making money. Now they're saying they may accelerate cash returns to investors.
They're getting sued.
They're right. The investors say, hurry up.
You got all this money. Let's get some of it from you.
They have a huge amount of cash in hand.
Apple may be able to mint its own platinum coin with all that cash.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's,
talk about that?
No, let's not.
What's the, what? What?
Coins?
No, what?
Let's hijack the show.
No, it's already been hijacked.
Amazon.
Apple's got a lot of cash.
Amazon's doing coins?
Amazon has coins, too. There are lots of coins out there.
What are you talking about? Amazon coins, steroids virtual for the Amazon currency. App Store.
Yeah.
Their own script, company store. Buy Amazon.
Eventually, they're going to be their own country. That's my theory.
Yes, and no sales tax in your own country.
They're not physical
coins.
Amazon
lockers are going to become Amazon pod hotels.
But wait a minute. Embassies for
Microsoft has been doing this
country.
For ages with Xbox points or Xbox.
They have, yes.
Right? You buy credits that don't exactly equal dollars or cents.
Right. And the pitch is for your kid. So you can get your kid this limited amount, this fund. And they don't have to have a credit card, and then they can buy the stuff.
But the real value is you don't know what you're spending, and you have to spend it in chunks, so you end up buying more than you ever need anyway.
The real value is the money is in this account, can only be used for things at this particular store, so you might as well spend down the account.
Right.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Facebook did this for a while, but didn't they discontinue the credits,
credits? Strip places do this.
Strip joints.
Yeah, strip joints.
Yeah.
It works for them.
Peep shows. You put in a dollar, they give you some tokens.
And then can't use them for anything else. You
might as well come
can't
back.
Take them home.
Yeah. That's right. I'll tell you, the wife doesn't like it when you got those lusty lady coins in your pocket. It's easy to spend those by accident.
But every coin costs 1 cent. So 99 coins. Yeah, that's true.
These are Amazon. Okay. You're now back on Amazon coins because we were really going with that strip thing.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, it was a lot more fun.
Amazon coins, one per penny.
Correct.
But you can only spend them on digital content, apps, and in-app purchases.
Idea.
Yeah, and you have to buy them ahead of time, right?
That's
and why would anybody
are a
do
lot of
this?
People for whom credit cards are an issue.
Amazon's going for the unbanked.
Amazon also says we're giving away tens of millions of coins.
Oh, they're giving them away
as well as selling them.
Instead of making it bad for customers, they're going to make it bad for their app developers and stuff. Probably have a better, better deal if you spend
cash. Pay you in
they'll
coins.
They'll give people a big discount when they get started to encourage people to use them. Then people will have these accounts, and they're going to want to spend them instead of buying their content from Apple or their product New Egg.
This is the FAQ on developer.amazon.com. Amazon coins are a new virtual currency that customers will be able to use to purchase apps, games, and in-app items on Kindle Fire. Was those Fire only? Well, who uses that piece of crap?
You liked it when it was on the show.
Why is money? Are people having
developers receive
money?
The same royalty payments no matter what payment method is used? One coin, 1 cent. If an app costs $2.99, it'll be 299 Amazon coins, and we'll pay the developer their share of 299 Amazon coins.
And some people do have a problem with credit cards,
especially outside the U.S.
There's a real elitist streak that goes on in our industry because we all have. We all make good money, and we have credit cards, and we think that all we do is type in a credit card number.
Right.
How
do you buy coins with a credit card?
How do you buy the coins? There's no Amazon store you can walk into and buy coins.
You know, if you have to go, what's the difference between going to the store and buying an Amazon gift card and putting it in and redeeming it, and going and getting a card for coins? There's no difference.
It's just another payment method. It's not.
It's another payment method. Yeah. It's also it's also potentially anonymous, but there are a lot of people. But most e-commerce today is based on credit cards, and another digital divide issue here. There are a lot of people for whom credit cards are not an option.
Buy the Amazon coins if you don't have a credit card?
You do a transfer directly from your bank.
Oh, okay.
Or from PayPal or something like that. Or from a debit card. But there are a lot of online sites that won't take debit cards right now. I get this all the time from people who were trying to buy my books who said they couldn't because the only option was a credit card and that wasn't an option for them.
Now you can order Domino's pizza with Bitcoins. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Pizzaforcoins.com.
Wow.
And maybe the pizza will arrive, and maybe it won't.
and maybe it'll be good. That won't happen.
It's Domino's. Come on. Let's not get crazy. That's who should be hired, the Dell dude. I'm so high, anything would taste good right now. I could use a Domino's.
You should be on their board.
Domino's board.
You could get two medium, two topping pizzas for 0.71 bitcoins.
Is that what the price is now?
Yeah.
899 Amazon coins.
Right. That's about 15 bucks. So it's actually cheaper than paying sawbucks. What do you call American money?
Greenbacks.
Greenbacks. That's the word I'm looking for.
Anybody ever call it that anymore?
Back in the day, they did.
Sawbucks. Fins.
There's an awful $5 bill.
Fins $5. Sawbuck is a 20, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
Two bits to a quarter.
Yep.
Yeah.
What else? Come on, historian.
A So what's the 100 called? It's called something.
Franklin. A Benjamin.
C-note.
I like the Benjamin. I think of the Benjamins.
Nobody uses Benjamin.
What do you mean nobody uses Benjamin?
Nobody uses
Benjamin.
It's
all about the Benjamins, baby.
C-notes is
Did better. You see, have you seen that really stupid meme? What is it, the Harlem Shake? Would somebody explain that to me?
Well, explain it to us. What are you talking about?
This week on Twit, old men discuss old money.
Old men talk about old ideas.
Money,
guys don't know anything.
It's
gray hair and greenbacks
and memes.
This week on Twit.
So the idea is, this is based on what? This is a song by, it's a dance that came, why am I getting an ad for Smoosh? What is this?
I don't know, but I'm not going to try it out.
I don't want it. How do I close it? It's a takeover ad.
The latest thing is they got that little box, X at the bottom of the box.
I'm going to use new Smosh.
And you're gone.
Now I don't
Sucker.
Know. Why did I do that? Okay, now I'm gone. I'm gone.
What happened to the thing?
Chad's a young person.
Chad, can you help us out with this thing?
Wow.
How does this
internet
work?
It doesn't seem to work.
So the thing's broken again.
On the internet, you Google Harlem Shake, and then...
on the internet?
Now, yeah,
used Bing.
Exactly.
What's that?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So Harlem Shake is this, it's literally 8 days old. The first Harlem Shake video, which is this weird one right here.
Okay.
Was up.
So it's this song.
You have to be in it.
Yeah, it was uploaded on February 2nd there.
Yeah, they're Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So they're doing a dance that was big in Harlem 20 years ago called the Harlem Shake.
We know that for a fact.
To a song that was created by this guy named Bauer.
It looks rather suggestive.
Yeah, there's always an edge of...
I think these guys have got issues.
I don't get it.
So that was the first one.
Yeah.
And then...
So it always starts out in a normal environment. There's like an office one, right, at the Makerspace, where it's a normal environment, but there's one guy doing this stupid dance. And
right.
Then for some reason, it's completely unknown. Everybody's dancing. And then it's over like at 15 seconds. It's the world's shortest...
Thank goodness.
Well, thank goodness for that, yeah. Right,
I wish it were over now.
We salute you.
Yeah. Do you have the office one?
Yeah, so, well, here, let me find the office one.
Really, the Norwegian Army version is the best.
Here's the office one. This one's pretty good.
This is like in a Makerspace. So one guy's dancing.
In a motorcycle helmet, of course, because this is dangerous. Don't try this without protection.
And then the drop happens in the song, right? And then they're all dancing. It baffles me why there's what is interesting about this at all.
Seizure with an iPad.
Yeah.
Okay, just shoot me.
Nerds.
No, that's pretty bad.
Nerds. Come on, we can do better.
Nerds. We got somebody behind us here doing the same thing, hoping to get attention.
That's our intern. That's Eli. He doesn't know any better. He's a high school student. He thinks it's a cool idea.
Yeah, he does.
I'll never get it.
Well edited. A genius. A genius has edited that thing. Definitely got it right.
And the table, still broken.
Yeah.
Google says self-driving cars 3 to 5 years from now.
That's a little aggressive.
They're already here.
No, they're not.
No, well, they are. You two really disagree on this. It's a little aggressive. They're already here.
No, I went to a lecture of the Google guy. He gave one over at the Autodesk. They do once a month. They give these lectures. And the guy says right now they can go 50,000. Right now the model is 50,000 miles without an incident. They have to get it way over 100,000 to close to 300,000 miles to get to make the car so they were actually safe.
But haven't they gotten to that number?
No, 50,000 is their number.
So have they gone 50,000 miles yet?
They've done
way
that.
Over 100,000.
So we're waiting for the first. There have been a couple of incidents, but no.
Always because of a human.
No. This is the car itself making a mistake.
Oh, really?
Anyway, the point is that they are already that self-driving cars. It's not a matter of we'll wake up one day and boom, you can buy a self-driving car. Right now, you can buy a car that has
lane departure correction, right. automatic cruise control, automatic brake.
Ford's doing all that
radar
right
cruise control, automatic parallel parking.
Yeah. I had another meeting with Ford and talked to their guy that's apparently their consultant is from the University of California. He's a transportation guy. He says this is all bull. This guy, by the way, I think is wrong. He says, all bull crap. It'll never work. Is this and that and the other thing?
I think
he went on. And Ford, by the way, refuses to buy into this. And they say, no, and network cars are the way to go.
It's
this
the company line. And I've heard.
You've heard it.
I've heard Alan, what's his name, the CEO of Ford, say this many times when asked. I always ask him whenever I see him. Autonomous cars. He says, no, no, people like to drive. I think it's like Steve Jobs saying nobody wants video. I think there's some misdirection going on. I think, frankly, Ford's got a big R&D going on.
Oh, no, I'm sure they do.
And they
but
really want to do autonomous
I don't think
vehicles.
They do. I really think
it's
they're
not
sincere.
In their interest. You know why? Because people buy – there's how many cars per person do we buy? We buy way too many cars. And autonomous vehicles would eliminate that.
No, the autonomous – and the autonomous –
Oh,
why?
Yes.
Why? You because still got to buy –
No, no, no. That this
because
is,
it
no,
takes
no.
the machismo out of having a car.
No, no. This is the promise of autonomous vehicles: is it ends individual ownership.
It ends becomes cars. Like
you just call for a car and it comes to your
call
house.
For a car.
Yeah.
You
why would you own a car?
You don't
just
need to
push
own
your
it.
Button on your iPhone.
It comes to you.
Car's there. You jump in.
A truck.
It drops you off.
If you need a pickup tomorrow, you get a pickup. If you need an RV, you get an RV. You want to go somewhere and have an RV? You go there in the car. You get to Santa Fe. You have the RV. It's all autonomous. And so,
and
from Ford's point of view,
the future.
This is an actual. This is a risk to their business, I think. So maybe they don't want this.
Well, I mean, they can still be building cars, but they're going to be boxes. Nobody's going to care what they look like. I do think people like yourself, Leo, the ones with the high income and lots of money.
People who are on the board.
You'll probably have a special, like, gold-plated thing that comes by that picks you up.
I want, the car. Send the car around, James.
But except for
James
you, we'll be just jumping in these boxes and off we go.
By the way,
but the short term, it's going to be like, you know, I'm driving from San Francisco to L.A. down I-5, and it's going to be like a really good cruise control.
Oh, be so nice.
Right?
Yeah, where that's what it is.
That's
what
it's a really
that's
good
how,
cruise
that's
control.
The change lanes.
You can sleep.
So it is inevitable. It's one of those things. That's tech. I mean, can you imagine a future, you know, even 50 years from now, where the cars aren't driving themselves? No. So is Ford thinking about how they're going to make money from this?
Yes.
Right,
because they know,
right,
and they're already slipstreaming.
They got
into
these
the
consultants
cars.
That are just talking, telling them what they want to hear.
Right,
and I don't think they do know. I know they're probably working on it, but I think they got all the confidence in the world that network cars are where it's
what
headed.
Does that mean?
I don't even
that
know
means
what
the
that
cars
means.
Talk to each other on the road. You're driving along, and
that's
cars
part,
says there's a wreck up here. It's like Waze automated.
Well, that's part of having this is you get a
it's
much more efficient traffic pattern if the cars can talk to each other.
You know what the shift was? When we talked about this 10 years ago, it required a complete infrastructure redesign. You had to have smart roads.
Right. You need the wire down the road.
It turns out with what Google's done with LiDAR and these smart technologies.
And cameras and smart
computers.
It
doesn't matter. You can be on any road.
Bumpy old road. Nobody cares.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Every time I use my cruise control in my Honda Civic and I realize that the guy in front of me just changes, you know, by 2 miles an hour and I get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the BMWs today already, they just, they slow down and they speed up and it's, and they park themselves. And it's, in 5 or 10 years, you'll have a full on, what will they call it, highway mode auto drive or something that you'll engage.
It's a smart cruise control. They already have smart.
And when you get to, when you want to get off the freeway, maybe you. Right.
They're doing
turn
adaptive
back.
Cruise control that slows
down. I don't
think
you have to do that. You just give it a location to take you right there.
That's
I don't think
I
you're going to have
eventually.
To.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Just in time for me to lose my license.
People
it'll
will
be perfect.
You'll be an old retired guy. I can't drive anymore.
No, I think I'm going to be talking
like
this.
You'd be
I'm
taking
sorry.
The other approach. I'd be taking the more of the.
I can drive, but who wants to?
And I think there's a whole
James,
generation
of
millennials that don't want to drive anyway.
Who wants to drive? It's not fun. We're going to take a break. You like to drive?
It is fun.
Yes, I do like to drive, and I will miss having to drive and because it'll be more efficient to not
They'll
drive.
Have special parks.
I know. But
that you can go to and you could drive around.
Imagine, I know. It'll be dumb. It'll be dumb.
There are
going to
be these amazing movie car chases where there are all the robo-cars on the freeway and then there'll be the old cars zipping around doing a car chase between all the robo-cars. It's going
to
be great.
It already happened.
Because you won't be able to drive like that.
There's
your
been
car
a number of
drive.
Movies. I think Idiocracy had something like that, too.
But didn't, so did, what was that Bruce Willis movie?
Where every restaurant's a Taco Bell?
He drives a flying car. And that's a good one,
that's
too.
Another one.
That's my dream.
The Minority Report.
No. Fifth Element.
Or whatever.
Fifth Element.
Yes,
a flying car.
Yes.
And all the cars are in this kind of rote. And
yeah,
he's
those
able
are
to...
flying cars.
Yes.
That was science fiction.
That's right. Speaking of science fiction, GoToAssist.com is the future for tech support. For 10 years, they've been the best remote access with the fastest speeds, the best tools for IT professionals, things like unattended support, 8 sessions at once. Now they've got 3 new modules that really turn Go to Assist into the ultimate for support professionals. They've added a ticketing module, lets you keep track of the service desk, lets it keep track of issues, resolve them. Change, release, and configuration management's built into that, so that's great if you're installing new systems. They've got the monitoring, which lets you monitor server health, performance, everything from how much hard drive space is left to how full the toner cartridges are. You get, you can set up these dashboards. You get these alerts via instant message or text message or email when something's going wrong. You're a support hero. You're proactively fixing this stuff before anybody even knows about it. People say, golly, that guy, that gal, she's good. Nothing ever breaks around here. It's because you are using GoToAssist. I want you to try it free. You can do all three modules for the next 30 days free. It's cloud-based support tools, not complicated, easy to use. You're going to love it. And all you have to do is use our offer code TWIT to try this free for 30 days. We do this with everybody, don't we? I love this idea. What, you know, if that shows confidence in a company, yeah, try it free. We think you'll like it. Go to assist.com, click the try it free button, use the promo code TWIT. If you're in support, if you'd like to take it to the next level, man, be a managed service provider. That's what Russell uses. Go to assist.com. Promo code is TWIT. Our speed round. Sony's having a big event. The new PlayStation is here, the 20th, New York City, right?
Yeah, I bought my first PS3 about a month ago. So
big mistake.
Time. No, no, no.
I'm holding off. I want to buy a new Xbox, but I knew there's a new Xbox coming.
I bought an Xbox, too. Buy the consoles at the end of the life. The games are cheap, and unless you want to be on the cutting edge, which I don't care, it's fine.
Well, this is the thing that is a little depressing. According to Engadget, it will not be improved hardware.
What?
Yeah. The main selling point will be new playing options.
What does so that basically mean? It's a PS3.
It's a PS3.
With a button. I win. Playing options.
PS3 with a button.
Playing options.
Playing options.
Yeah.
Paying. I think that meant paying options.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, there are some who say that console gaming is just kind of plateaued. It's over. PC gaming is due to make an emergence. And I think because of the Steam box and Steam, that may be true. That may be true. That's depressing. The PS4 doesn't have improved hardware specs. So it does have a Cell processor. I mean, it's a very fast piece of hardware.
Great Blu-ray player, too.
Yeah. All right. So buy one is what you're saying. Don't wait till the PS4.
Actually, it's funny. The PS3 and shopping around for a used PS3, they've really kept their value. You can't get a cheap PS3. They're still like a couple hundred bucks, even used.
The Honda of game consoles.
It's kind of amazing because that's like a 8-year-old console, and it's still.
Yeah. These guys would can't get them cheap. Upgrade these things faster.
Galaxy S4. Coming out March, or at least announced March 15th at Mobile World Congress, on sale from early April. Yes?
Sounds right.
Rumors are 5-inch screen, not quite a Galaxy S Note 2, but bigger than the Galaxy S3.
There will be a Galaxy with
for every
one-tenth of an inch.
Yeah, I know, they're really size. This is their, you know, Apple says we're going to make the one size. This is what Andy Knock always says. Apple makes the one size, you like it or forget it.
Yeah.
Samsung says, what do you want?
What do you want?
any size. We'll make them.
It's like going to a tailor or a haberdasher. Yeah. It's just, we got everything.
It's bespoke.
But the Galaxy, I mean, we've gotten to the point where the Galaxy is the other kind of relevant phone brand.
Yep.
There's iPhone and Galaxy. It's not Android. It's the Galaxy.
Get ready for this.
Successful.
It's going to have an 8-core process.
Oh, yeah, that's necessary.
Yeah.
Cool.
The Exynos 5 Octa.
We're going to do some cool stuff with that.
8-core GPU.
Will it have a stylus?
It will. Mine does.
I'm sure it will.
Does it?
Mine does.
Well, you have a Note.
Well, you have a Note, yeah.
The Note has a stylus.
It's a Note.
So, Samsung seems to really be digging the stylus thing, so I don't know why they wouldn't.
I think it's a selling point. You don't have to use it. You don't lose it. You know why? Because if you walk... Oh, wait. I did this before. If you walk away... Go ahead. Walk away with my stylus. No, I think if you walk away with the phone, it says you've left your stylus behind.
Well, now if you walked away...
Oh, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to tie my keys to the stylus.
What difference does it make which one disappears?
No, it doesn't.
Let me walk away with this. Hang on.
Okay.
Does a stylus beep if you leave your phone behind?
Maybe it auto-locks, like if you walk away from your car with your car keys.
Nothing's happening. Keep going, John.
Yeah, the door's that way.
Go down the street.
He's not coming back.
He's not coming back.
You gave him the fake stylus, right, Leo?
It's gone.
Back a little further, over the cliff, back a little further.
Yeah. Galaxy S4 will be available in Eastern Europe first. I don't know why that is.
Fantastic feature.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I never take it out anyway, so who cares? And if I lost it, I wouldn't be crying.
Just trying to correct the...
Well, it says it does it.
Well, they lie.
13-megapixel rear-facing camera. That's nice. 2 gigs of RAM. These are all presumed specs. 2-megapixel front-facing camera, 720p. Mm-hmm. Jelly Bean. That'd be interesting. Looks like this is a fake Photoshop. But they put a lens flare in.
J.J. Abrams took that one.
It's very easy to do with
Photoshop.
Just
to make you happy. It's such a fake lens flare that it doesn't even look real.
It's actually the planet Venus.
But that's a rendering of the presumed S4. That shows you how successful Samsung is. That Apple level rumors are now emerging about
Samsung.
Well,
did you see? I mean, there were charts this week about the profit share in the mobile phone industry, and it's like Apple with 60% and Samsung with 40%.
Right.
They're the two companies making money on phones, and those are the two big phones. The Galaxy has joined the iPhone in that list, and that's great for Samsung.
250,000 Twitter users hacked. I was one of them.
Me too.
Yep. That's because we all were early adopters. Apparently, it was the first.
I wasn't very early adopter. I was not happy.
MacWorld and
Okay,
so that's theory out the window.
At Curry was hacked, and he came in long after me.
I had a good password, but I still have to change it.
I changed mine. Yep.
Yeah, me too.
I actually use that as an occasion to deauthorize everybody.
Yeah,
I discovered
I had over 100
of apps. Yeah, crazy.
Is there people do this thing where you change your password, like
probably.
Whenever you change the clocks, change your password?
It's got to have something to do with that because I have zero. I don't use any. I use the web for Twitter.
I don't think it does. When did you join Twitter?
I joined not but
I could
long
find your Twitter
you
birthday.
Oh, yeah, you could probably.
Yeah, what is it? The real? Yeah, you joined it after me. You poo-pooed it.
No.
You did not. Oh, no, that was podcasting. sometimes I confuse. So let's see what your Twitter birthday.
It was blogging, if you want to be a
Was it blogging? Okay, Real Dvorak. Let's see what your Twitter birthday is. April 7th, 2008. John, you were very late to the game.
Jesus,
what's
your birthday?
Him.
Yeah, oh, everybody was before him. Mine's 2007.
Okay, well, maybe it's
a year before.
Ooh,
that.
A whole year you beat me.
Well, I'm just saying, if you want to be in the first, if you want to be hacked, you got to get in there early. 9th of April, 2007.
I think that was it,
because
I think you look up Adam Curry and see where he came in.
Actually, that's my second account. I joined December 2006.
Oh, then you quit because you
quit.
Had it. Right,
oh, that's
you quit.
Right. That's right.
I quit because I was pissed off.
Well, that's
protest.
Funny because I'm pretty sure I was a member before you quit.
So you sort of Instagrammed it before
I did.
We knew what that
I was
was
mad. Adam Curry was born on the March 24th, 2007, so he should have been hacked.
Yeah.
It was the first. Everybody before May of 2007 got hacked. Now, by the way, we weren't hacked. They didn't get into our accounts.
No.
They were salted encrypted passwords. They weren't easily broken.
It's a password file, which means that they can run some pretty serious hardware against it and maybe get the passwords out.
But it was salted.
But if you do have, if you use that password somewhere else, you should change it everywhere else too. And you should ideally get a password manager that saves your passwords for you and do some just auto-generated passwords.
That's why I wasn't worried. It was the only.
I use a password manager and I auto-generate long crappy passwords. Which, by the way, if you have to enter that password into your mobile app, what a pain in the neck. Anyway, but I'm terrified that somebody's going to hack the password manager, in which case my life is over.
Everything,
yeah.
If they got my LastPass, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
all your eggs in one basket.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you got to trust that vendor and hopefully they are pretty clear about how they encrypt.
They're actually very good. LastPass is very good.
Yeah, 1Password does a great job too, and they've been pretty clear about it. But that's the jig is up if they get that one.
Although, as many,
I mean, it's got to be the world. Those things have to be the largest targets right now.
Password manager
target.
I guess. Actually, I would go for something easier, but
I don't know. I think the people who use Password 1 as their password are the biggest targets right
password
now.
Password Monkey is my favorite password.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Twitter, it was mentioned in 50% of all Super Bowl commercials. Facebook, only 8. Google+.
Technically, that's Twitter or hashtags, right? There are a lot of hashtags at the Super Bowl.
Right. Everybody had a hashtag, right?
Yeah, which means they
hashtag,
could be on Instagram.
This game sucks.
Yeah.
Hashtag fixed.
How many of those hashtags are actually ever used?
Somebody
I saw those numbers too, Leo. And how many people watched the Super Bowl? Like 175 million
something?
Like
that,
But that was more
Some very, very large number. And they were all excited because 13,000 people retweeted a hashtag.
It's the same thing as...
I'll have to get out Excel here to
figure
out
I think
what
you're right. It's a
small
percentage. But it's the same thing as customer service on Twitter. You know, if you have a problem with any company, tweet about it, and you'll get special treatment. I mean, but it's true. A tiny minority of all customers.
Yeah. They don't know that.
Right. Well, they do know that, but for some reason they've decided that Twitter is like, you can't let somebody, you can't let a nasty comment go by on Twitter or you're going to, something bad will happen.
Yeah, I find that amusing.
200 million active users on Twitter now. That's a lot, but it's not Facebook number. I think it's the it's a fad.
I think
Twitter,
it's over.
It's a fad. It's over.
I think it's over.
The next big thing, the Harlem Shake. You watch everywhere. Everywhere.
Every show is going to start breaking their tables, too. It's going to happen. It's going to be called the Leo.
That was so not worth it. I cannot tell you how so not worth it. I think we should just stop.
I think we're done.
I'm cooked.
Let's talk about old money again.
Bitcoins.
Amazon Cash.
I want some Amazon Cash.
You can use it to pay for your self-driving car.
The Surface Pro back in the box.
Yes,
you know?
I think we're done.
That's how much you like it?
He's got to ship that thing off.
So would you? Are you going to buy one?
Yeah, probably. And, you know, the other thing about it, I was thinking about this for the last, what has it been, 6-7 hours now we've been doing
it? It feels like it.
But I was thinking about it. You know, there's this vapor mag.
Oh, yes. The vapor deposition magnesium body.
Well, but the point is, you know, and talking about all that, it's this is not a mass-produced item. This is not like right. off the shelf.
Apparently not. Apparently it's handmade.
No, that's what it actually is, handmade. So that's actually one of the things that's kind of interesting about it. And as I was boxing it up to send it back, it gave me an opportunity to think about that. And
it
I
was
thought
untight.
I was
sorry.
By the way, I did miss the top story of the week. Brent Ratner is going to produce a half-hour animated television series based on Farmville.
Ooh, that should be exciting.
If you thought it was fun harvesting crops on your iPhone.
We can all just dine
what
now.
What network will that be on?
Wish me into a virtual cornfield, Leo.
Well, Brent Ratner has produced such great TV shows as Prison Break, yeah. Hercules, Rush Hour, yeah. and X-Men The Last Stand. So this is not
He ruined the X-Men franchise.
Yes, he did, didn't he?
So, good luck, Farmville.
He says Farmville is one of the most exciting brands out there today, and I can't wait to ruin it.
Wait, check the date. check the date on that.
Is this really old?
Is it 2009?
No, it just feels like it. Wow. February 7th. How do you say February?
February. You just did.
February.
February.
February?
It's not February.
It is February.
We're just going to go bazinga.
Thank you so much, Edbot, for being here. Ed writes for ZDNet. Do you have a special vanity URL like Mary Jo? Is it like edbot.com or something like
that? It is indeed edbot.com. Go there and buy my books and read my blogs and
talk to me
and send me notes. Yep. There I am. Yeah.
There he is.
Office Thanks, Leo. It's been a pleasure. And Jason, it's a pleasure to finally meet you.
Yes. What? Yes, indeed. Seriously. We'll have to do it in person sometime.
You've never met?
Yeah.
Well, there was a rule about sort of ZDNet Windows and IDG Mac world, and it's like arch enemies.
It's funny you say this now because he was mumbling under his breath, I got to get rid of this guy.
He must die. You know, Ed used to go on our old radio show, Dvorak on Computers. It was really, reminds me of the old days. John, me, Ed. All we need is some pastrami sliders from Max's, and we'd be set.
We don't have any food in this place.
Yeah. Anyway, great to see you again, Ed. Thank you. We'll get you back soon, real soon.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
Jason Snell, he covers the world at IDG, editorial director there for both PC World and Macworld magazines.
Yep.
Great to have you. How was Macworld this year?
I didn't go this year. I had some family business. I missed it for the first time in 20 years. It was actually very sad.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't go either.
I wanted to be there. It was not my decision. I had some family emergency,
basically. You really couldn't
go. I couldn't go.
It wasn't an excuse for not going.
No, absolutely not. I wish I could have been there because they're changing it. It's more like, you know, a Comic-Con kind of cultural event now, which I think is smart.
That's the way to go.
That's the way to do it.
It wasn't horrible.
It wasn't horrible.
You did go.
Yeah,
it's a ringing endorsement.
And I talked to some of the vendors who were there, and they're like, we're actually doing deals.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, you just got to change the expectations and change the focus.
It's not a Mac show. It's the iWorld.
And make more about what's happening in the evening. They're going to do it over the weekend next year. I think
it's
smart.
I'll go for that.
Just it's a fan show.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Comic-Con for Mac users iOS users. Yeah.
And tech, the industry could use a Comic-Con for tech, I think.
Actually, it's a great idea. What kind of cosplay will it be? I'm going to go as Michael Dell, maybe.
I'm going to be the Apple II motherboard.
Or maybe the Dell dude.
That would be better.
You
that,
do a really good Dell dude impression.
I could do the Dell dude.
He does that's the rich guy timely. Better.
I can't decide.
It's always 420 for Leo.
It is. That's right. There was, by the way, there was a little, and we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, in the Samsung ad, you know, they're doing the unicorn game and all that. And they have the two people working in the company who still have Blackberries. And there's the one woman who's, no, I have my Blackberry phone and my I have a system. But it was very prominently 420 on the phone.
Yeah, I saw that.
I wonder why.
It was a gag.
It's a gag.
There's some
it,
intern.
It was an Easter egg. Yeah. They'll
inside
never notice.
Joke.
It was. Been fired. That's probably what it was. Evernote is the new home of the great Rafe Needleman. It's good to see you
it's
again,
good to
Rafe.
See you. Yeah. It's good to be on the show.
Where's your blog?
It's called Opportunity Notes, and you can find it at opnotes, oppnotes.com. If you're in the startup world, please read it.
Awesome. Really appreciate you coming
it's fun.
In.
Fun. Yeah.
We'll get you back soon.
Right on.
And John C. Dvorak, host of No Agenda, noagendashow.com, Channel Dvorak. Busy man about time. What'd you think? I read your I did not know what an aficionado and expert on football you are.
Yeah.
Your column.
If you notice, I didn't really predict they were going to win, which is. And by the way, how come they never actually ran this new modern offense?
They did some pistol, they did
a
some
couple.
Reads. You're right. They ended up getting back in there. It was very interesting, but having read your column, I understood the game so much more. So I thank you for that. It's newdomain.com. John is an expert on so many things.
Newdomain.net.
Oh, no wonder when I got to newdomain.com, there was a naked woman. Let me go back.
That's the old domain.
That's the old domain. Oh, newdomain.net. This site may be compromised. Well,
okay. Says that?
Didn't the Google search results, but then I got here and it was okay. We've had that happen too. just, you know, these bad guys. I did not mention, and if you are at all interested in the UPnP hack, which is actually much worse than a lot of exploits that are out there, Steve Gibson did a good show about it on Security Now this week, and I highly recommend it. And if you want to test your router to see if it is vulnerable, the kind of the bottom line of this is several thousand router makes, hundreds of manufacturers have a significant flaw that was based on the Intel reference code for universal plug and play. The code is broken. People just put it into their software and their router. Mm. It allows universal plug and play from outside in.
Ah.
So the idea of universal plug and play is a Xbox or software in your network, inside your network, can configure the router automatically. Well, now your router can be configured automatically from anybody, anywhere.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. So if you go to grc.com/shieldsup, Steve is still doing the great Shields Up router tester, and he's added the capability of testing your router for this vulnerability. Would certainly be prudent to turn off universal plug and play anyway. It's a feature no one needs, really. And if you do, and then, you know, test your router after you turn it off, and with any luck, you will not, you know, you'll get the message that says you're not responding to my pings. If it does respond, and by the way, since he put this up last week, 1,363 users have had positive results. That means those people are really vulnerable to hacks from outside.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's worth running. grc.com/shieldsup, or listen to Security Now from last week. Thanks everybody for joining us. And we do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2300 or 2400 UTC on twit.tv. Ed just had to go. He just hung up like that. Boom.
I've had it with
you guys.
Very dark there.
I'm done. The lights have gone down. You can watch live, and we'd love it if you do. As you can see, I talk back to the chat room all the time, you sons of beaches. But sometimes you can't, and so you'd have to listen after the fact. We do make audio and video available after the fact by download. There has been a bug, which Apple knows about in iTunes. Did you know about this? It's not updating podcasts.
I didn't know that.
I knew about. Well, we knew about it because we're having nothing.
No
but
agenda.
Trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. No agenda.
So we've
show.
Contacted
we
Apple
to go directly.
You can still subscribe to a show. If you subscribe, you will get the latest shows. They're just not showing up if you do a search for a show on iTunes.
That's an old annoying bug.
It's really annoying. Yeah. Just we know about it. Apple knows about it. They say they're fixing it. Thank you, iTunes. It's only in the iTunes store. But if you subscribe to a show, you'll get the shows, and that's the main thing. Do subscribe to our show, and you'll get it automatically. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing.